Hello, everybody. It's Weekly Manga Recap time here on February the 17th, 2016. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm pretty tired, Nick. Not gonna lie. And I don't know why I decided my best way of helping out was to drink NyQuil, but we're just gonna see what happens with that. I'll probably be awake throughout the whole podcast, 90% right. Certain.
Okay. It's the sleepy time podcast, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to kind of fit into the theme a little bit, considering the manga we're discussing. Just something that kind of eases you into, like, a comfortable night's sleep or something like that.
Yeah.
Wanted to get into that. And,
Snow White falls into the deep sleep and gets revived by the prince in the original. Or is that how it is? Does she actually die in the original? Like, I never know how those fairy tales actually work.
Disney definitely cleaned them up a lot. They made them seem a lot more appropriate for our ages, where I feel like a lot of them are pretty horrible.
Like, I'm assuming in the original Brothers Grimm... Was that a Brothers Grimm fairy tale? It seems like it would be.
Well, just type in Snow White fairy tale. God, I've been fucking reading manga too long. I literally can't spell fairy tale the right way. I spell it like the manga first.
It is a Grimm's fairy tale. Good. Okay. Blah, 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 blah.
Let's see. Appalled and in disbelief, the queen is hesitant to not knowing, blah, blah, blah. I guess they murder the queen by making her dance to death in flaming shoes.
She does fall into a deep... She does fall into a deep sleep in the original. Okay, so yes. Yes, okay. So, we are currently under the fucking poison apple, and this podcast is going to be our Prince Charming or whatever.
I just want to reiterate what may have been glossed over there. Here's the conclusion of Snow White. As punishment for her attempted murders, a pair of glowing hot iron shoes are brought forth with tongs and placed before the queen. She is forced to step into the burning shoes and to dance until she drops dead. Credits. That's how Snow White ends.
Would she die from shock? Or what?
I guess just burning pain and exhaustion.
Like, I would think that, like, I don't know. You'd think that her legs would give out on her.
Well, I mean, if they're searing hot, glowing hot iron shoes would mean they're, like, you know, fresh out of the, you know, the forge. So I feel like they'd incinerate her feet to begin with, and she'd just be holding herself up off of, I don't know, pure adrenaline, maybe like a love of dance. She's like, I don't want my last performance to suck.
Well, I'm being forced to do this, but I might as well go out with a bang.
Yeah. I'm going to go out doing that Usher dance I always wanted to.
Baby, it's a nice.
I think people probably curious. They're hearing a third voice laughing at our hilarious back and forth, Nick.
No, that's our new laugh track. That's going to be our first thing.
It's like our Big Bang Theory. We just got that in there.
Santa Claus.
Every so often.
No, we have Annalisa here.
Hello.
Kaito Ace, our lettering friend.
Yeah.
Which, I guess the logic for her being here, the way that you explained to me, Chris, was we're talking about something girly, so we need someone who has such...
Girly!
No, I mean, look. Yeah, I'm like, look, Nick, I have a penis. I don't care about this stuff. No, I feel like whenever we do one of these Sojo series, I feel it's fun to usually have someone out there who actually enjoys them, too. Because, look, Chris... As much as I can enjoy these series, ultimately, they aren't my demographic. I'm not the one who's going to get into them, so I feel like it helps to give an honest feedback on it to have someone who is a self-proclaimed fan of the series to provide your insight. Which is why I was considering last week getting a pornographer to help us talk about Akisora, but they were all unavailable. They said, they were all busy playing Five Knuckle Shuffle, which I guess is a game the kids are playing now.
Oh,
I guess
behind the school.
Yeah, well, it's also a euphemism for masturbation. Do you not know this?
I know!
Oh, okay. I was confused. Like, I was like, does Nick not know? I say that because a friend of mine in grade school did not know what the term boner meant and thought it applied to bottle rockets, which it did not.
No, it's just a mistake.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, we're talking about Snow White. Well, Snow White with the red hair.
Right. Akagami no Shiroyukihime, which means Princess Snow White with the red hair. Or redheaded Princess Snow White. However the hell you want to translate it, you know, whatever. Basically, it is a new take on Snow White. Kind of. It starts off a little bit Snow White-ish. There's a poison apple. There is a girl named Snow White. Well, she's named Shiroyuki. And the prince who saves her, they end up having, you know, falling in love, basically. But other than that, very little. There are no dwarves in this manga. Where are all the dwarves? There are supposed to be 7 of them. Not 0, not 1, not 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7! 7 dwarves are needed in this, and there are no... There is a distinct lack of little people representation in this manga. Come on, guys.
Now, were they little people, or were they mythical creatures?
I don't know.
I'm like, was Disney super progressive in implementing little people into popular culture, or were they just magical creatures in that world?
Well, some adaptations of Snow White certainly were not progressive in the way that they treated the portrayal of the dwarves. Say hello to my little friend. Eh.
Ew, what was that?
there was literally... Because there were like 3 Snow White movies one year. It wasn't Snow White and the Huntsman. It was like another live-action Snow White that had, you know, little people playing the dwarves. And
I remember that year.
Was Cate Blanchett in one of those?
I think so. I don't know. I didn't see any of those movies. But there is literally a point where, like, you know, in the trailer, where, you know, one of the dwarves goes, "Say hello to my little friend," and another dwarf, like, jumps on a person or something.
I saw, I think, 2 of those, because they were on a flight I was on, and they were both pretty awful.
I was going to say you saw them because you were strapped to a chair and forced to as part of some Guantanamo Bay torture method.
Pretty much. Although, you know, when I watch a bad movie, you get to that tipping point, and you're like, well, I might as well finish it. So sometimes, even on my own, it becomes a, okay, I guess I'll finish this crap.
So there was like 10 minutes left of like Snow White and the Huntsman when you got off the plane. You're like, well, I guess I'll go Redbox it and watch it from the beginning.
You know, a girl's gotta do what a girl's gotta do.
I guess I'll go pre-order tickets for the sequel now. You know, I'm already invested in the story.
God damn it, why do I have to be such a completionist?
I know they tried to make Snow White and the Huntsman seem a lot more exciting when it went to FXX, because the only like scenes of it they showed were like some giant battle scenes. I was like, is Lord of the Rings on FXX? And I was like, Snow White and the Huntsman. I was like, what the fuck?
It's like that climactic scene in the Twilight movies. It's like, oh, this will give us all sorts of stuff to put in the trailer, and then it'll turn out to all be a vision.
I mean, they don't have some giant Ultron-like battle?
It was actually, like, one of the greatest moments of my movie-going experience, because, like, I went to see that movie with a bunch of guys, and we were like, oh, this is actually really awesome, and it's like, no, none of it was real. Ah, fuck this! And people just throwing shit at the screen.
All the teenage girls in the rows behind you, like, quiet down!
So romantic.
We're putting 5 Michael Shuffle back here! You're like, that's... shouldn't be able to. I don't know what problems I want to start with on that.
I mean, you do you, I guess. Literally. anyhow. So, Akagami no Shiroyuki. So it starts off with this girl named Shiroyuki in pseudo-medieval times, I guess.
Fantasy world!
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly, you know, a super magical kind of time, but, you know, it's like, oh, you know, fantasy setting and stuff. And so Shiroyuki has red hair. Red like an apple, specifically. And so this is... it denotes her as having a rare form of beauty. And so the prince of her land learns about this and is like, I want her to be mine. Let me... She will, you know, invite her to my place and, you know, we shall cavort together or whatever, you know. And so Shiroyuki's like, I've heard that prince is an idiot and an asshole. So that's presumably why he wants to be around. And I'm just some common girl. I'll probably screw things up for him and embarrass him. So I'm not going to let that happen. But I can't just say no, because he won't accept that. So I'm going to leave the country. And she does.
Yeah.
She just leaves. Like, without any warning to anyone. Apparently, I guess she doesn't really have any family or friends or anything in the country. She just leaves.
Her relatives are dead.
Yeah.
She lived with her grandparents, and they've passed away.
Right. So she has nothing, you know, binding her to the land. So she's like, well, I don't care much for this new president, so I'm going to Canada, basically. And so she leaves, and she goes to the neighboring kingdom, but the prince, you know, sends people to get her. And on her travels, she meets this other traveler named Zen. And they get along quite well. They hit off pretty immediately. They make friendly and stuff. And essentially what ends up happening is Chiriki gets captured, I think, twice in a row, if I remember correctly, to be taken back to the prince. And Zen and his bodyguards save her and end up confronting the prince, and they're like, you know, leave her the fuck alone, and so on and so forth. And basically the reason, the way that they get this to stick is that Zen reveals he is the second son of the royal family of the neighboring kingdom. He is the second prince of the land. And so Raji, who is the prince that was after Shiryuki, is like, oh shit. And after being, you know, cowed by Zen's awesome swordplay skills and so on and so forth, he's just like, okay, I'll leave her alone. So Shiryuki goes to stay in the neighboring kingdom, and basically, you know, she's developed this friendship with Zen, and she goes to visit him a number of times, and eventually she decides, okay, well, I will find my own way in this kingdom so that, you know, I can continue to see my friend and so on and so forth. And things happen from there.
Love happens from there, Nick. Love.
It's, I do kind of tend to notice this with a lot of the shoujo series we've covered. A lot of times there's not necessarily, like, you know, a long-running, like, this is where we're headed kind of setup. It's, this is what the situation is, you know, just kind of watch it happen sort of thing. So, there's no way I can say, like, and then they, you know, this is what they're trying to do and so forth. Because a lot of times things happen where it's just like, okay, this will take a little while. And it's like, well, kind of, but kind of not. Like, basically, because Shiryuki decides, okay, I will become the palace pharmacist so that I have, you know, this permanent job here. And, like, two chapters go by, and she already has this apprenticeship position. So it's like, okay. All right, then.
Yeah, it's stuff they kind of set up relatively quickly to kind of give her a reason for being in the kingdom, and basically to give her residency there. Give her a reason to be close to the prince all the time, because there is a ongoing sort of plot of the fact that they're from two different cultures. You know, she's a commoner, he's a prince. It'll never work, Nick. That's what they're saying. It will never work.
That is one of the things that does pop up a lot, which is, oh, she's the friend of the prince. What makes her so special? You know, and it's one of those kind of annoying things. It's a little bit like how, okay, it's marginally like how we kind of notice when people are like, oh, what's with that Asta kid? You know, he's so headstrong and stupid. He's got no magic, but he's strong. People keep on making that same sort of observation. You see a general trend of, oh, there's that girl with the red hair, and she's so pretty, and she's got the prince's attention. What makes her so special? That's the same reaction that a lot of people have, and you have to see it a lot because it at the beginning, because, you know, new characters are being introduced, and that's their always basically their initial impression of her. Sometimes it's a bit more negative in tone, but it's generally the same observation that they're making.
do you like her, Nick? Do you like Shirayuki? Because, I mean, this series is, against most of the shoujo series you've read, I will say one of the things I like about this series the most is that it does not play into melodrama as much. There isn't really, like, a predominant love triangle, per se. She has feelings for Zen, Zen has feelings for her, and it's kind of just them realizing it, you know, 50 chapters later or whatever.
Well, they kind of realize it, like, 15 chapters in.
But it takes a while for anyone really acts on it. But it's not one of those... I'm trying to think of, like, a good example from... Like, I guess Skip Beat maybe had a lot more of that, like, jerky old boyfriend just showed up out of nowhere at my birthday party. How am I going to react to this? Like, there's not that so much. Like, I thought it was actually going to be, like, a big point when Raji shows up again. The prince that tried to buy her as a concubine shows up. And he basically just gets schooled, gets stomach, like, gets diarrhea, and she's like, I'll be friends with you again. And he leaves. You're like, all right, fair enough. I mean, you know, they solved that up all neat and tidy, and nothing, no drama really had to happen in their relationship. So I can certainly enjoy it to that regard, but what that ultimately means is that I feel to enjoy this series, you have to like Shirayuki and Zen a lot, because that is predominantly what this series is going to be about. You're not going to get a whole lot of side characters going on. This isn't a Nisekoi, Nick. You don't get to just enjoy Segumi chapters when they come up every now and then. You have to enjoy Shirayuki.
Or Ruri chapters or whatever. Yeah.
Nick, there are no Ruri chapters. They're just Onodera chapters that feature Ruri.
No, there were Ruri chapters. There was when they went
to... Oh, her grandfather died! Whatever.
You guys are clearly forgetting a very important character who actually does kind of make a love triangle, and that's Obi.
Yes.
And let me tell you, the best pairing is the three of them together.
Wait, there's three people pairings now? Have we just added a new element to Shirayuki?
Chris, do you know what this means? This is the first ever instance on WMR of an OT3.
Hell yeah, it's a great one! Oh, man. Because Zen likes Obi, maybe not in a romantic way. Zen likes Shirayuki, definitely in a romantic way. Obi definitely likes Zen, not in a romantic way.
Well, then, hold on. So, two of the members in this OT3 don't actually like each other in a romantic way?
Well, you never know. I think Obi could swing both ways and totally go for Zen. They're really close, guys. It's really clear. And also, you could just go with the Shirayuki-Obi pairing, but that's just kind of cruel. I mean, they do spend more time together.
So, in the three-person pairing, how does this work? Is it just an open relationship with one person off to the side? Is it a three-person marriage?
Is there no eye contact between the two who don't actually like each other?
Is Zen, like, just a cuckold? He's just like, I'll sit off in the corner, you go to work, I'm gonna watch. Get my taxes done.
Well, there's actually a surprisingly good amount of fan fiction for this OT3, and I've seen it done.
Of course there is. It's a popular shoujo. There's got to be a lot of fan fiction for it.
But no, most of the time it's just a loving relationship between the three of them.
I'm gonna find out if the pairing I want exists in this series.
What pairing is that?
I'll tell you in a moment. I'm gonna look for it. Fanfic.
So, a lot of the stuff in this manga is... I agree that, you know, there's now, with the what you brought up, Chris, there's not a lot of really melodrama in the series. You know, things happen, but they don't tend to generally be blown out of proportion when they do happen. There aren't many, you know, there was a big misunderstanding, you know, between characters that normally trust each other, and so on and so forth. A lot of the series is built around the fact that a lot of the main characters get along really well with each other, honestly. And they have kind of revelations about their relationship with each other through the course of the series. And I do agree with what you said, like, if you want to get into this manga, you have to like the main characters. Because they're aren't really too many events I can point to and say, oh yeah, that was really cool, or oh, that was really funny, or that was really sweet, or something like that. It reminds me of the pace and the tone that, you know, kind of slice of life manga tend to have, where, you know, it's like, okay, you know, here's this character, and they just kind of, you know, go around doing stuff, and you enjoy just kind of watching them go through their day. Except, you know, of course, it's in a fast setting, and there's a whole bunch of romantic elements and stuff. There are dramatic moments. There are, you know, big action scenes because there is some amount of swordplay involved in it. But it's not really the main attraction in my eyes. So.
I enjoyed this series to a certain extent. I did not find any of my fan fiction, by the way. Apparently there's no Izana Raji pairings out there in fan fiction, so I just thought we were really going to create a Targaryen empire there.
Oh, I think it's time for you to write that.
I don't know enough of the series to write that, unfortunately. Zapdos would have to implement his way into that series a lot faster than normal. I enjoy this series to a certain extent, definitely. I think that Shiryuki is a very admirable character. You know, I like the fact that she has kind of a focus that she sticks to. I like the fact that her and Zen don't have any necessarily, like, glaringly stupid flaws. Like, they're both characters you're like, okay, these seem like both two very productive people. They have good goals and ambitions in life. You know, she's not someone who's just like, I'm just going to sit around here and romance will come to me. She's like, look, I want to become a pharmacist. I'm a smart person. You know, I'm dedicated. I like all those aspects to her. But my issue that I found is that I started to find her a tad bit boring and a little bit of a Mary Sue. Not necessarily in a bad way, but in a state of, there's really nothing bad about this. There's no flaws to Shiryuki or Zen, per se. They don't really have any, like, large detracting characteristics that make them human or anything like that, so there's not really much of a story to get out of them. And because of that, in a way, I just kind of got bored of the series eventually. And, I mean, granted, we're marathoning a romance series that's monthly in the span of about 2 weeks, so, you know, that plays a part in it as well. But I do wish it was some... I just wish there were more interesting characteristics to some of the cast, because outside of those two, they're really... I suppose. But outside of that, I feel like the other characters... There's not really a good supporting cast, I guess, to help keep the story up for me. I like some of them, but they just don't do enough in my eyes.
I have to agree. I mean, I love this series. I super, super love this series. But I think it's one of those series that's just better month to month. Uh-huh. Because, yeah, it's a slow shoujo. Like, cool stuff happens, but... Yeah, I mean, sometimes it just feels like it drags on. Not enough happens.
And I think when you read a chapter to chapter to chapter, you start to notice how kind of uneventful it can be at times. Sort of like reading a Garfield comic strip book, you know? After a while, you're like, he really talks about being fat and lasagna a lot. This is a little silly. Come on, get into your shtick, Garfield. And then he has, like, a whole series of jokes on the fence. You're like, alright, I'm getting back into this. Then it's right back to, like, diet is just die with a T. And you're like, oh, Garfield, God, you had me.
I hate Mondays.
Like, why? You don't have a job. Dumb Tish,
you
don't
have to go to school. I think that, it's not a thing, because I talked, you know, about how, you know, the way that people react to Shiryuki is a little bit odd, because a lot of them react to her in the same way. And there's something that I did like, because Izana, you mentioned his name, that's Zen's older brother, the first prince of the kingdom. And when he first shows up, because, you know, it's like he's been away since... before Shiryuki actually first starts, you know, visiting the palace, he shows up there, and he's like, oh, so who's, you know, this girl that I've heard so much about that my brother is so fascinated with? And he meets her, and he has this, you know, really kind of... He has this very menacing presence about him, because he's so confident in himself, and he doesn't really care much for her. And basically, he just, you know, tries to intimidate her, which he does by standing close to her and kissing her forehead.
Hey man, that's super creepy.
It is creepy, and I really liked it because, you know, he was, you know, he just, you know, was just trying to freak her out, and so he did. One of the ways he did was be like, "Ah, I kissed you before my brother did."
And she can't, like,
do anything.
Yeah. She can't do anything because he's the first prince. Like, kick him in the balls. Oh, you can't kick him in the balls.
So he's like, "Oh, very good. You know, you didn't back down. You didn't flinch or anything. You got a nice look of determination about you." But then he says something to her, which is, "I'm going to enjoy seeing what happens because everyone is looking at you, thinking that there is something special about you aside from your beauty, and I can't wait to be there when they find out that there isn't." And it's like, oh, that's so awesome.
Oh, it's so cool.
But then, as I went further in, it was sort of like, well, I guess that's sort of the point. Because she goes around saying, it's like, there's nothing really special about me. She's definitely underestimating herself, but looking into it, there isn't something especially special about her. It's just that she connects with a few people in a way that no one else has, which is, you know, a special thing, because, you know, she's special to some people.
But it's not like she has special powers or something like that, or is right. Especially smart, or, you know.
She's determined and she's, you know, admirable in that respect. She is confident and she knows what she wants. And she's still trying to figure stuff out because, you know, she's young. But there is not, she's not, you know, the chosen one. She's not, you know, a naturally gifted genius or anything like that. She just, you know, works hard to accomplish what she wants to do. And that's really basically it. So she's not a super special person. It's just that because of her natural beauty and because she's close to the prince, people think there's something special about her because, oh, she's connected to royalty and all that stuff. And so that's kind of a cool dynamic to have, you know, playing off of, you know, expectations like that by saying, well, she's not special, but she is, you know. But at the same time, like Chris said, that sort of makes her a little bit boring because, like, okay, well, what's the dramatic hook to her?
Yeah, what's the unique thing about this character that's going to make it worth reading chapter after chapter and gain invested?
The red hair, guys, clearly.
And the black and white series. I just had to take people's advice. Like, they're like, yeah, it's really red. I'm like, I'm going to believe you on that. I see, like, the first image from the anime, it's yellow. I'm like, this is bullshit! Slapping things off my desk, I agree.
I trusted you!
Dear Japan! I would like to talk to you.
No speak English. I didn't dislike this manga, but I did have difficulty getting into it because of that stuff. Because it's like, okay, well, nothing's really driving me to get invested in this. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of momentum carrying me through my experience reading this manga. And I don't really think that I'm going to continue reading it. It gets that, you know, very unsatisfying, big ol' not for me stamp on it.
See, now this is why we have Annalisa on, because this is someone who I feel can give an appropriate recommendation.
It's for me!
Every manga should be for me, though!
I'm a white man! Why am I not getting catered to?
Why isn't Mad Max doing anything?
No. What's your thoughts on it?
Oh, I mean, like I said before, I am a big fan. I really like it. Yeah, it definitely has problems, but what's the end goal of the series? You know, do we want them to get married? I mean, I guess so. But it's pretty clear that they're into each other, so he's the second prince, so he could probably take her as a wife. So, like, there's no big conflict. So it does, I don't want to say it makes it boring, but it definitely lacks a punch. My cats are, it's really windy outside here, and my cats are, like, freaking out because there are leaves blowing around.
Stupid cats. Cats are interfering with the podcast again, Nick. Liam's spirit lives on.
But yeah, no, I mean, I really like it. I like all the characters. I don't know. I don't have a lot to say. I like the main cast. I also like the supporting cast, though. Like, I really didn't like Raji when he was introduced because, you know, he's the douchebag of the series. But it's fun to see him, spoilers, later on when he comes back to visit the Clarinus Castle, and then later they go to Tauburn. Tauburn? What are you doing? Stop it!
I like it just sounds like there's anarchy, because you can see me and Nick. You can see what's happening in our screens. Annalisa's world is a complete mystery you had to make up in the theater of your mind. And I have to assume that you're just like, I don't know, like you're just in like a spinning house or something like that.
I feel bad now because one of my cats is deaf, so she can't hear anything. But the other one, like, he looks all sad and he's looking at me like I've just killed his mother or something. Like, no, come back here. No, don't go. Don't, yeah, come here. Oh, you stupid cat. No, but like, I really liked seeing, what was I saying? Oh, they go back to Tauburn? The other country.
Yes.
And it's really fun to see how he's changed as a character and to listen to why he's changed and all that. I think that's really interesting. I think the story's at its best, I guess, when it actually goes into the side stories of the other characters. Like, I really liked learning, I don't know if you guys got this far, but there's a side story about Mitsuhide, that's pretty early on, and then later there's one about Kiki, Zen's retainers, and I thought they were really cool because those two are badasses.
Yeah, Mitsuhide's backstory was really was cool because it's not just about him; it's also about, you know, Zen.
And it helps explain Zen's character as well as his own, as well as Mitsuhide's own.
It's one of the kind of things though, where it's like, God, I wish they were doing more interesting things with that kind of development, though.
Yeah.
It's like, well, all right, so because the only. I didn't get especially far into this series, but I did get to a point where they were, like, doing some other stuff that didn't exclusively, you know, revolve around Shirayuki. Like, early on, there's this plot where, oh, God, I forget the girl's name. Pardon me. The girl with the birds.
Mm.
They're visiting from this neighboring country, or I think they're, like, something that I forget if it's, like, it's something that I think Zen's kingdom, they're, like,
it's an island in the kingdom, yeah.
Right. And so, she has befriended this bird, and she's got, you know, it's incredibly useful, like, all the birds can be trained incredibly well to accomplish these awesome things. And the guy who has been in charge of overseeing the island is just like, not all the villains can be Raji and Izana, basically.
I really want to live in a world that Nick's created and just see every asshole is just an incomprehensible thing.
Magic, there's peasant. So Shirayuki befriends this girl, and they have this whole plot where Zen comes up with the idea of, oh, we can use these birds to deliver messages throughout the kingdom and stuff. And they have this, I think, I can't remember if it's two or three chapters long, but it's basically like they set up this thing so that, you know, the woman has a chance to prove the capabilities of her birds, and Shirayuki is basically assisting her. And while the guy who was overseeing the island is trying to sabotage it because he's an asshole. And so, you know, I think I would have liked to see more stuff like that, like, oh, you know, what you know, the activities of the royals and so on and so forth, featuring this incredibly non-royal, fish-out-of-water girl that, you know, is special because she's not special kind of thing. Seeing how a regular person basically deals with all these weird royalty situations, because I mean, there's the stuff where it's like, oh, she has to learn how to dance because she, you know, is a peasant, and she has no idea how to do any of this stuff, and it's like, okay, you know, there's only so far that kind of stuff can grab me, but if it's stuff like, you know, dealing with, you know, I don't want to say, like, politics, but basically affairs of the court that actually have consequence, essentially.
I was just going to say, well, actually, currently, they did go through a lot of politics stuff, but...
She is running against Donald Trump in this chapter. she unfortunately did not reserve Shiryuki.com, and now he's just hot-linking it to his website, so... In response, she tweeted a picture of a gun and just said, America. She's kind of hoping that'll pull her back on with the conservative vote, but it's not looking so hot.
Oh, God.
I'm just going to date this episode.
No more politics.
Yeah, I agree that I think it'd be fun to see her in more of that sort of position where she has to deal with the nuances and the jobs of the court beyond being one of the royal pharmacists. I don't know, maybe we'll see it in the future. The series is currently on this kind of long arc that's kind of dragging out, but it does have politics, but it's not politics of the court so much, it's more pharmacy politics, so that's interesting.
Oh, God, it sounds so boring.
Hey, they're doing magical, not really magical, they're doing cool science experiments, guys. They're going to change the world. Maybe.
They might. I mean, I'm astonished for ye old middle-agey as a world as it is. She made, pharmacy in that world, or pharmaceuticals, just seem to kind of have their natch on everything. They're kind of just like, yeah, I made this thing, it helps cure hangovers and shit like that. You're just like, everyone's really advanced in this time. I thought she'd be like... The rat plague will be in you. If you put leeches under your eyes, it will drain the evil from you. Like,
oh my God. Can someone make a freaking Dark Ages era black comedy about the adventures of a plague doctor?
Oh, man. I'd read the shit out of that.
I just need to cut off your boils. Shing, shing.
Thinking of the pharmacy, one character that we haven't talked about that I really like, actually, is Ryu, who is Shiryuki's teacher, but he's only, 12 years old, something like that. Because I think he's really interesting, because he's a quiet... I mean, he's 12 years old, but he's super smart, but he's super awkward. Mm. And I really like how automatically, Shiryuki meets him, and automatically she's like, okay, yes, sir, you know, what do you want me to do? You're my boss. I really like that about her character.
That's a hint towards, you know, what is special about Shiryuki is the fact that, you know, she's able to get along with him so easily. You know, she treats their position well, but then, you know, when Ryu needs, you know, to not be treated as just a superior, then she does that too.
Yeah.
She doesn't hate children, really like which that. I feel is a real feat. It's a rare trait to find in people nowadays, not hating children.
Not hating 12-year-olds.
Hey, but look at Ryu. He's pretty much a badass little 12-year-old because he's more like a stoic
teacher. I was worried you were going to say hot in there. I was going to get so unnerved.
No.
Although,
no.
Honestly,
we
probably should have expected that the adolescent girl would totally be fine with getting along with essentially Hitsugaya, you know?
Well, so does that make her Momo in this situation?
No, because she does.
Is Azama going to come back later on and everyone's going to cut Shiryuki in half thinking that it's him? Can I start writing this series, Nick?
Go right ahead.
Sweet.
I'm going to get sued. I'm sorry, I'm just stuck thinking about who represents what characters in Bleach.
I just want to say, I enjoy this series, and I can see why people would enjoy it in, you know, essentially long stretches. I got kind of burnt out on it, but I can recognize that as far as, you know, the Shoujo series we've read, this is at least one of probably the better written ones and one of the least annoying ones. You know, as I said, you're not going to run into a whole bunch of writing developments that's just going to make you kind of like roll your head like, oh, this is fucking ridiculous. He shows up again or anything like that. It's generally a pretty simple story. And for that, it's well appreciated. Now, if you aren't into romance stories at all or shoujo or things of that nature, I don't think the series is going to do anything to change your mind. But if that's your wheelhouse, if you're like, I can't have enough, will they, won't they, hot guy, hot girl, Middle Ages romances, then yeah, Snow White with the red hair is definitely going to be up your alley. It needs a better name. I don't like saying Snow White with the red hair. It's one of the worst titles. It sounds just disgusting to say with my mouth.
And the Japanese is a real mouthful.
So. Yeah. We need to call it like... Shiryukihime. Yeah, let's call it like, Snow Red.
Snow Red.
Snow Red Hair. I was trying to think of, like, a Rurouken, you know, like how people shorten Rurouni Kenshin to Rurouken. Or maybe I just did, but try to think of something like that for Snow White. Snow It.
Snow Hair.
Snow Hair, there you go. Sure, I feel like that's no something sense. Else, but yeah, that's close enough. So there you go.
And if you don't want to read it, the anime is streaming right now on Funimation. Mm. The second season is airing. And it's animated by Bones, so it's animated well.
Mm. Bones, that's ones who have My Hero, right?
Yes. Yes.
I can't wait for that. When is that supposed to come out?
I think it's April.
I need to see that. Oh, and I just realized that the JoJo Part 4 anime is coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
I need to mark that on my calendar somewhere.
You have a calendar you can mark?
Yeah. Doesn't everybody? You know, just all use digital calendars, right?
Actually have a Snow White with Red Hair schedule book.
Oh, wow. This seems very coincidental.
Yes!
Almost as though it was planned, but it wasn't.
It was in my schedule book.
Huh.
No, it's that's
she actually
just,
has
that's just
written. She actually has written in her schedule book, mention Snow White with the red hair schedule book.
She's like, right around 8:07-ish, mention it. 8:05, she's like, I'm a couple minutes late, but I'll make it up later.
Let me tell you, if you're really cheap and want a schedule book, and have access to Japanese a place that sells Japanese magazines, usually their January issues come with free schedule books, so you can just take your pick. That's how I get my schedule books every year. Just have to buy that magazine.
This is actually something I forgot to ask, and I feel it's very relevant to this discussion, by the way. On a scale from 1 to 10, how hot of a dude is Zen? How scrumptious, I could say. How scrumptious is he?
He's not exactly my type. I'd give him a 7.5 or an 8.
7.5? All right, there you go.
Not your type goes that high? Jesus.
he is pretty hot. However, Obi is a good 9. He's
with the hat or without the hat?
I really like that hat. It's really dumb, but I really like that hat. No, either one. Okay. I appreciate all Obis.
I feel like there's another character called Obi in something else. I feel like I'm...
Are you thinking of Obito?
Maybe, but I feel like there's another character called Obi in a... I'm just gonna type manga Obi, see what pops up. Sex with animals?
What's that doing in my autocomplete?
You gotta bookmark that for later. But, yeah, no. What's manga recap, Nick? Don't we have to do one of those?
Yes. Let's do that. Recap, portion week of manga recap. Enough talk about the, romance and the, no, people punching each other and making fart jokes. That is our stuff.
Were there fart jokes this week? There are butt jokes this week. A lot of butt jokes.
A lot of butt jokes.
I don't know if there's any necessarily fart jokes, though.
We'll see, I guess.
Toriko had to be darker this week. Didn't have time for fart jokes.
Right. Well, up until about midway through. Yeah. Anyhow. Let's start with some Black Clover, page 49. Sin for Sin. Also sounds like a porn title. Anyway.
Does it?
Sin, you know. Exchanging sins, you know.
Sin for Sin? I guess so. Maybe like an upscale kind of classy porno.
Like a porn made for women kind of thing.
Yeah, I assume so. I've never, like, I was like, porn title from this? No, I'd be like, Sin, Slutty, Slut, Sin, Part 4 or something like that. That's the porn I watch. A miss what?
Mystery title.
Sin for Sin. Yeah, I could see that.
Revenge Killing.
Yeah.
Or like a movie title. Yeah. It's very upscale. It's mysterious. So, alright, why don't we all take thing, Nick, you make the porno. Annalisa, you make the mystery novel, and I'll make the movie, and we'll see which one makes the most money. But then we combine them together into, like, an Avengers-like universe later on.
Wait. So we have to combine a porn, a movie, okay, I'm with you so far, and a novel.
A mystery novel.
So we basically have to create a movie that you read, which is also porn.
Yes.
Mystery porn.
It's one where you...
Which hole did he put it into?
It's
like a quiz. Take your quiz at the end.
It's a pulse-pounding adventure. You want to turn the page, but not too quickly, because it's a tantric porno. You take your time. You cherish each page.
Oh, God. Anyway. So, Black Clover. Last time, Asta and Yami survived falling rocks because Ki is awesome!
Ki is awesome! Hooray for Ki!
So, Asta wants to fight Leashed, and Yami kicks him in the back of the head, and because Asta took a blow to the back of the head, he's knocked out, and so Yami has to take them onto one himself. No, of course that doesn't happen.
He kicks him in the back, not the head.
I can't tell because he bends
kicks
over.
Kicks him in the butt.
Yeah.
Does he kick him in the butt?
Yeah, the action's kind
of... He must
work.
Have a lot of upward force if he's kicking him in the butt, because he's toppled over.
Yami has magic kicking powers.
Yeah. It's his other magic spell.
Darkness and butt kicking. So, Yami says that he's going to take on Leash personally, and he says, "You take on this scrawny line-faced dude." That's what he says. Also, at one point, it looks like Asta has turned his head around like an owl. Because he's looking over his shoulder at Yami, but because of the way the word bubbles are oriented, it sort of looks like he's turned it entirely around.
Perhaps he has.
Maybe he does. Maybe that's Asta's actual magic.
Yeah. He's like, I have no bones in my body.
So, Yami says he's going to go all out, and this, like, wave of darkness starts pouring out of his back, and he leaps forward to attack Leashed, and they engage each other in battle, Leashed observes that his attacks aren't so much being blocked anymore, his magic is being drawn in by the power of the dark magic. It's absorbing the light, like a black hole, kind of.
Like Blackbeard.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why I equate it to.
So Yami says, observes by the fact that, that grimoire you've got, that means you're a citizen of the Clover Kingdom, so why are you attacking your own country? And Leash says, "Well, haven't you noticed, since you're a foreigner, the distortions in this country? Some are on the brink of death from starvation, while others have more than they can eat and throw the excess away. People are ranked by how much or how little magic they have. But then, some have great magic but are discriminated against for reasons of birth. Some are hurt in the name of justice because they were born in another country. We were born from these distortions in order to correct them."
That's not creepy at all.
I mean, he has a compelling argument, though.
White privilege. I'm seriously getting major, like, why do we have to, care about the minorities and stuff? Doesn't anyone care about the white Christian males in this country anymore? We're being discriminated against.
Feel about Leashed?
Well, yeah, because he's like, the people who are blessed with power know we're being discriminated against. What the fuck is up with that?
Well, he also talks about the people who are born on, they're starving and shit.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't. His cause has nothing to do with the people who are actually starving. He's like, the people with great magic who are being discriminated against. Fuck this,
The things he lists are all they're terrible things, but they happen in every country. People are starving. Other people have more than they can eat. Like, this says people are ranked on how much magic they have, but, you know, it's like, it's money and other... these are normal things. They're unfortunate things, but they're normal. He's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Fuck all you guys. I'm a Team Leashed over here. Me and him, we're gonna join up with Magneto and the Brotherhood of Mutants.
You like Mr. Lady Cornrows?
Oh, I thought you were gonna call me something. I was like, Lady Gaga, how dare you?
You can
be... I only wore my meat bikini once! I'll have you know.
Chris is over here like...
Life.
Chris is over here like, man, Leashton and Zana are awesome. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I'm like, yeah, there should be a White History Day month. Why isn't there?
But, you know, yeah, so I do like the way that Leash concludes this, where he is like, we were born from these distortions in order to correct him. Like, not only is this his cause, this is the reason he was born in his mind. And now he's like, are you sane? And he's like, yes! Of course I am! Now let me answer your sins with sin. Which I have no idea what he's referencing. I don't think he's actually referencing anything. I think they're just trying to title drop there, I guess.
Well, I think he's saying, I'm going to respond to this. I think he's saying it to Yami as a representative of the Clover Kingdom in general. So I'm going to respond to your sins, the Clover Kingdom's sins, with, you know, death of my own, a sin of my own, essentially.
Okay. They keep on fighting and are making a really, really big mess of the cave that they're in. And Asta is blown away by the amount of power that they have. And he actually starts to, you know, doubt himself briefly. Because like, oh man, I don't have any magic. So even if I were to drain, could I surpass this guy? Could I surpass the Wizard King? Could I surpass Yuno, whom I've already surpassed? God damn it, Asta. Anyway. My rival! Spatial Magic Guy starts to chip in as well. Allowing Leash to get, you know, alternate angles of attack by, you know, creating portals for him to shoot lasers through, essentially. And Yami lands heavily next to Asta and is like, I told you to just handle the scrawny dude. Come on. I don't give guys jobs that they can't do, so go fight him. So I was like, okay, Asta go and fight him, basically. More spatial magic stuff appears. Lasers start shooting at Asta from all angles, but he's got key now, so he can block them. Although, he can't block all of them, because there's so many of them.
It's kind of interesting to me. He doesn't just block them. It's like, spontaneously, he developed, do you know Zach from Power Rangers had, like, the breakdancing martial arts style?
I feel like Papakito.
Yeah, he just developed that all of a sudden, because he's, like, balancing on one hand attacking some of them. I feel like he would be doing the Usher dance through the room, slashing and doing things. He's like, come on, kids, I'm hip-hop Asta, I'm cool. I'm down with all your big new moves. But watch Asta, me whip and nay-nay.
But Asta, we just want to go to the fireworks factory. he does get hit at one point, and Spatial Magic Guy is like, oh, it's all right, I can keep this up forever, and just keeps on attacking him. And Asta's like, oh no, what should I do? I don't know if I can last until his magic runs out. Okay. Alright, I just have to fight him my way. And he throws away his swords! So, Spatial Magic Guy's like, okay, I'm just gonna hit you with an extra big one then. And the pearl opens up near Asta, and he jumps through it.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I thought you were doing pretty good for yourself, magic dude. And then you kind of screwed it up for yourself. If you hadn't made a big one, you would have gotten through this.
So Asta just jumps through the portal and punches him in the face.
It's great! It's so awesome! I love this!
I fucking hate this!
I love it! What's Asta the best at? Punching people!
Asta's not the best at punching people.
what's his best move? I mean, Yeah, sure.
I thought it was that sword laser thing that he did when he absorbed magic and sent it back, honestly.
Yeah, but he can only do that when he has somebody cooperating directly with him.
I liked it when he threw his sword that one time, too. That was kind of cool. He could have thrown his sword through the portal. That would have been nice.
But that would have
That would have canceled this portal out.
That's why he threw him away.
See,
he was thinking. He was thinking for once.
He was one step ahead of us, Nick.
I really didn't like this, honestly. Is well, especially because we follow this up with Leaf gets basically a free attack in on Yami because Yami's like, "Aha, that was awesome, dude." And so Leash attacks him from behind, and Yami just spins around and is like, nope, black hole, absorbs it, and then slashes, you know, unleashes this huge slash of dark energy, and it cuts into Leash's shoulder, or it looks like it does. And that's where the chapter ends. But it's like, okay, great, these are some villains you're building up here.
Well, what I gotta say, so a lot of people have been complaining that Yami is just dominating this fight. But you have to realize that he has the type advantage. Think Pokemon, guys! Like, he has at least a 2x type advantage, whereas the light has does half as much damage. I mean,
if he had any other type of magic,
he'd be sunk.
There's no light in Pokemon, though. If you want to make anything, Leash would be Fairy, in which case, Fairy has a 2x type advantage against Dark. So, okay, this whole scenario just falls apart. And I don't have a mic, this is a pen, but I'm dropping it anyway.
Point stands!
I would say it like this. It is going to be irritating if this is, like, you know, Leash, like, next chapter, it's Leash, like, you've damaged me, and now I'm going to flee away! And he dances away or something like that, and, like, leaves in a, like, a giant cloud, like, a dust-shaped cloud of himself or something like that. But I think the one thing I'm kind of optimistic on is that there's no real reaction shot from him after the attack, so I'm hoping that it's, you know, there's something to suggest that this wasn't actually him just, like, taking a near-lethal blow kind of for free in this fight in a situation where he looks like he should have had the advantage. Maybe he's like, it was just a clone of myself, or, you know, I actually blocked it, or, don't you know, I'm made of sand, or something. Something there's going to be that this guy still has an upper hand, you know, yet to reveal. Some ace up his sleeve to show that there's still power in his, you know, in his court, I guess you could say, at this point. And if that's the case, then I, you know, this can work fine. And I don't mind Asta getting the advantage in and beating Line Face Guy, which I'm now considering his actual name because I don't want to remember what his real name is.
You call him Scary Face.
Well, they call him Line Face Guy. I feel like I'm being supportive to Yami in that way.
But his.
I mean, I am still, like, leaving, you know, stuff open to change my mind here on this, but let's look at what Asta has done recently. Just in this sequence leading up to this moment, he fought Sally and Mud Golem Guy, and they won, you know, because Gouch came back and cloned him and stuff. Then Leash showed up, and Asta got speared a couple of times. He had rocks fall on him. And then he's just like, no, I'm still fine, after taking more laser burns, and he just jumps through the portal and decks the guy.
Well, he's not fine, though. I mean, you can see that he's super wounded. He even says, I don't think I'm going to last until his magic runs out. My legs are just about at their limit. I mean,
through a portal and punches him. He flies. He fucking up-B attacks his ass.
That doesn't take that much energy.
Yes, it does. Have you ever tried doing a running leap through a portal to punch someone on the other side? I have. It's really hard.
Well, you don't train. You need to train like Asta trains.
Apparently. I've never seen his ass train, okay?
You've not been doing the portal hurdles, Nick. That's your issue.
Asta's training like every time he's at the Black Bull's base.
We've seen him train once. He does push-ups.
He does a lot. Hey, he does squats too, okay?
That's why he has such a great ass.
That's why his legs are just about at their limit, and not at their limit yet. And you use your legs to jump through portals!
This is like the third person in a row that Asta's beat. This is like John Cena levels of endurance, he's going to win by disqualification at the end anyway.
This is basically the only one he's beat by himself, though. Everybody else was like a team-up. So he might have delivered the final blow, but he would have gotten his ass handed to him if, like, if Gauche wasn't there.
Well, but my point is he started with the disadvantage of having, you know, gone
But Yomi helped him out for a while, because Yomi's a badass.
It's worth noting, he didn't fully beat this guy. He just punched him kind of hard and, I don't know, maybe knocked him out temporarily enough to kind of cancel his magic, but it's not as though he's been arrested and put into custody.
He's not assuming, dead or anything. He's just punched in the face.
I'm assuming he'll wake up and be like, what the fuck?
You seriously let that guy punch me in the face?
Why did I create a man-sized portal when my smaller portals were doing just so well?
No. He created a slightly larger one, but Asta's just so tiny. He's short stuff.
I feel like somebody, like, if there was, like, an NFL Sunday-esque, or NFL game day, like, show for manga, I would be, like, Deion Sanders up at the screen. I'd be like, you see, this issue right here is that he came in, he already had portals of the rat size, they were attacking him, he wasn't getting anywhere. I don't know why you would change this plan. You got Doug Martin running for 4.5 yards per carry, why would you start passing the ball? Yeah, are you playing? You got something good going on anyway. That's him dropping the mic again. I don't know if Deion Sanders doesn't really do that, but it made a point, it was very good. Yeah, what do you think, John Madden? Well, I guess that's funny.
I lazy go in the ground.
I still think this is a good chapter in some ways, but I see where your issue is, Nick. I do see where it is, and I can certainly agree with it. I'm taking the optimistic approach for right now, though.
Yeah, I see your points, but I just don't agree with them at all.
I see your points, but you're wrong.
Let me tell you a thing or two about Black Clover, sir.
Alright. Let's move on to Bleach.
Wait. Brawla wants me to try to pronounce this dude's name. I don't know. Lady Cornrows, that's what his name should be. Leashed. I don't know, like, Leek? Leek?
Leash.
In Japanese, it's Vihito. Leek? I'm sorry. See, this is why I should try to pronounce stuff, Rala. I'm sorry. Anyway, let's go to Bleach.
Is there a shi sound at all in Japanese?
Oh, a shi?
A shi sound.
Shi.
I don't think there's a shu. Not a shi. I don't think quite that sound.
Okay.
Rishit. I want to...
It'd be like, yeah, so it'd be like what? Rishito?
It's Rihito.
Oh, wow.
So, like, okay. Rihito. I believe.
Rihito. People are like, wow, your German was slightly better than your Japanese.
This is what happens when you have so many freaking European names in your Japanese series and get weird ones like that. Anyhow.
So, what was, out of curiosity, I don't think anyone would know, what's the Japanese name for, like, the Quincy's then? Like, na 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 na
na na na na na na I can tell you all the Black Clover names. Well, I can look them up. I can tell you all the World Trigger names. Black Clover, Bleach,
That's my forte.
But what's Afko Kator's name in World Trigger?
It's Afto, I think just Krato? Oh, man, now I'm down with it. Give me a sec.
All right, we're going to talk about Bleach now. Otherwise, we're going to be here until
wait, here it is. It's Afto Kuratoru.
Afto Kuratoru.
Okay, yeah. All right. Bleach 662. I don't see the title anywhere, so I guess there is no title.
Doesn't have one.
There's no chapter title anywhere in this, because, well, there is there is one image in the chapter where I guess there would be enough room to put the title, but no one would ever put it there, so I'm not even going to bother looking.
It's probably somewhere real subtle, Nick, like in the window of one of these background, like in the buildings in the background. Something very tasteful and small like that, because it's really, he's not trying to put a focus on it.
Sometimes he puts, like, the chapter title, like, somewhere on someone's body, but it would probably be on their face, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if it were a woman. It would be on their face.
I think it's actually... I think I can see it a little bit in Asuka Noclavar's hair on this one panel. I think I sort of... If I squint a lot, I can see a number.
Okay. So, we cut back to the fight between Asuka Nakvar and Yoruichi. Asuka Nakvar is doing pretty well because he's raised his immunity so high that he's, you know, cool. You know, whatever. Meanwhile, Yoruichi's like, fuck, ow, everything, eh. And Asuka Nakvar, meanwhile, is, you know, sitting back, and he's like, well, I'm not sure why you're not dead yet, because, you know, I, you know, use my super awesome fatal dose stuff to fuck you up. And he's just basically says, well, Yoruichi is like, oh, you call that, you know, failed dosage, oh, whatever, you know, and Asuka Nakvar says, no, you're just a crazy monster, super powerful, that's why you're doing so hot. And Yoruichi's worried that Yushiro is going to die. He already looks dead.
He looks like, so, oh, it's been a long time since I felt bad for any Bleach characters, but I feel really bad looking at that panel. Oh, poor guy.
I would feel more bad for him if he wasn't such an idiot. It wasn't like, I've become immune to Reishi. I bet if I hit him with a lot more Reishi, I could take him down.
Fortunately, Urahara appears, staring at Yoruichi's
grave. Hold on, wait. You have to go into this one exactly how they phrase it. Where he's just like, no matter what you try, I'm confident that I have the initiative. I think that's pretty fatal, don't you, Yoruichi? Indeed! It's wedged in there rather fatally! As he's staring at her butt from behind.
So presumably, Urahara is staring at the way Yoruichi's thong is digging into her butt? Is that what he's referencing?
I mean, yes. He's staring at her wedgie, essentially. By making a joke about it. Making a crack at it, if you will.
Oh! Making an ass of himself.
He just doesn't want to be the butt of the joke, Nick.
Oh. Oh, God. That really annoys me. Okay. No, it's alright. I'm just really anal about puns. Alright. So, Yoruichi, like, reflexively kicks Urahara in the chin. And he's like, I came to help! And he's like, and she's like, stop staring at my ass! She basically says that. She says specifically, look at me and not my behind. She essentially says the equivalent of eyes up here, you know? So, Urahara is like, I'm sorry, I guess the expression wedged was rather vulgar. And Yoruichi says, that's not why I kicked you. Stop touching my butt while apologizing.
I like that you don't even see that part of it. You just hear her complaining about it off-panel. Like, stop touching my butt!
Isn't this hilarious, this, you know, casual sexual harassment?
God. Well, I mean, to be fair, Urahara's kind of always done this. He's always been a bit of a perv. He's been a bit of a weirdo.
Okay. Yep.
He hangs out in the store with a naked man in an apron, I mean...
Hey, nothing wrong with that, man.
No, that's to be fair.
But he also has a couple kids there, and that's good.
Yeah, actually, no, that is actually really wrong. Actually, I take that back. No, there is something very wrong with that.
So, Urahara shoves something up Yoruichi's butt, which causes her to shoot into the air all of a sudden, which catches Asuka Nakvar off guard. He's like, what did he just do? How did he undo my death dealing? No, he's exactly what I've been told. The five special threats were chosen because of their incalculable aspects. Kurosaki's potential, Kenpachi Zaraki's combat strength, Ichibei Hyosubei's wisdom, Sosuke Aizen's spiritual pressure, and Kisuke Urahara's incalculable tricks.
Defeated by Asuka Nakvar off screen, battled to a draw with a brain in the jar.
And then got fucked up by Pernita.
Already been defeated, didn't know he was supposed to be that wise, and bound to a chair.
Go, Soul Society!
So, also, let's go over, like, the incalculable aspects thing. Okay, Ichigo's, I get that. Zaraki is essentially the same thing as Ichigo's, so I don't know why it's called anything differently.
Well, I guess it's slightly different because Ichigo, I guess because he's so many things in one, you never know what you're going to get. You know, there's just so much potential within him, but Zarake is just so strong in martial combat, he just seems to always find a way to get above himself. I can understand the bit of a stark difference between those two. It's a little ticky-tack, but I can see the difference there.
Aizen's spiritual pressure, I get that because he's essentially immortal now. Urahara's tricks, he's such a, you know, weird planner, and he's so cutting, you know, he's very unpredictable.
The only dude who could outsmart Mayuri, essentially,
right,
if it came down to it.
Hyosuke's wisdom.
I didn't know this dude was supposed to be that wise.
And Juhabak schooled him anyway.
Well, he seemed like he had something going for him, but I wouldn't say, if you had to choose five special threats, I wouldn't put him in there.
The five unpredictable elements when Juhabak schooled his ass, and he would be dead if somebody hadn't showed up to save his life, basically, by saying his name.
I would have been so much more happy if the fifth one had been, like, Kumamura's giant useless Bankai. And it's just a shot of the giant Bankai getting, like, hit in the face with a rocket. Like, oh, I've been defeated again.
So Asuka and Akbar is like, oh, what do I have to come against this guy? Yorichi's butt. Even the dog thinks it's ridiculous.
Oh, Skoshi's going nuts. Well, she knows there's a cat coming up, too, so that's
Yorichi's ass in your face. Urahara's right. It is wedged in there.
Ugh. It's gonna hurt so bad.
It is lewd as fuck, this shot. And apparently the thing that Urahara did to her butt was tattoo the chapter title on her cheek.
There's something so wrong with the phrase, what Urahara did to her butt. I feel like we're back reviewing Aki Sora again. What did they do to Sora's butt, Nick?
Oh, dear God.
So, and, of course, she has to put it this way. Yorichi says, what did you inject into me? And Urahara says, that's a secret.
If you put something in my butt, the next phrase when I ask what is it should never be, it's a secret. I think that should be a rule.
So Yorichi guesses correctly that there is some sort of immunity thing that Urahara basically cooked up so that she has some, basically an enhanced immunity to Asuna Octavar's technique, so she's not, you know, collapsing on herself. So she attempts to unleash her Raijin Senke again, and Urahara immediately is like, hold on a second there. Let's try. You know. Stop doing this! Like,
he has become very creepy.
You put on a list, Urahara. You already wear that goddamn hat. Got that stupid fucking scrub. You, I know that you're not allowed to be near schools already. Because seriously, what the fuck, man? Where did Uru and Jita come from? I'm not even asking that, like, jokingly, or like, you know, I don't think you should be allowed children, haha, kind of thing. I mean, like, where did they come from? When is this going to be explained? Are they going to show up next? I wouldn't be surprised. There are already 500 billion characters involved in this arc.
Who do you think
they're going to be the real heroes?
They're going, Nick, I have it. Last chapter of Bleach, the new Soul Society is formed up with those two, Umbrella Haired Girl and the other kid from the start of this arc, the other two Soul Reapers, you know, the one with like the balding hair. She has an umbrella in her hair. I guess it's easier to say she's like receding hairline girl. Nick, the Soul Reaper Nick is, apparently. If it puts you in a dress. I'm sorry, that was me, Nick. I apologize. I didn't need to go. That was a low blow. I think your hairline's awesome.
No, Yorichi is like, no, we're not going to do that. I will never take on that half-ass grotesque form ever again. So Urahara's like, well, then I guess I'll have to force you to do it. Okay, so Urahara's been doing weird butt stuff. Teasing her in deliberately lewd wordings and is going to force her to do something. Did I miss something when I read those chapters where Yoroichi seemed to be the one who wore the pants in this relationship. You know, because it seems as though Urahara suddenly has a great amount of control over her that has never been hinted towards before at any point in the series.
Maybe he's taking this opportunity because she can't really go against him because she's so injured. This is the only time he can wear the pants.
Maybe they have a really fucked up S&M relationship.
It's creepy.
So Yoroichi tries to fight Asuka and Akbar, and he actually just punches her in the stomach. And he says, "What, you really think you can actually beat me because you've just recovered? I still, you know, poisoned you and when you were at full strength. So you're not at full strength now, you know, so I can actually take you on." So then Urahara, while she is frustrated in front of Asuka and Akbar, and again, but right in the frickin' panel, she stares between his legs and sees something that she doesn't want to see. And yes, that was on purpose. But it's Urahara. He's holding up pieces of paper. And he's got a piece of paper that says, "When I flip this page, you'll be transformed." And he flips the page. You don't see who it is, but she does transform. Okay. I don't know what that was about. And yes, she transforms and gets covered in lightning again. And she's got, like, long-ass lightning ears and gloves and boots that are sort of made of lightning. She has claws, and so on and so forth. Apparently her spandex is gone.
Yeah, her leotard dongle disappeared.
She appears to be naked.
Well, no, you can clearly see what looks like a thong made out of lightning.
It's not a thong, it's a tail.
Well, no, there's
like around it.
Yeah. A lightning thong. And it's presumably like a lightning, you know, halter top with it or something like that.
So presumably Kubo is just like, you know, that hero has it figured out. Yeah. Never a bad time for weird fan service.
I'm more interested to see how this ever, if it's ever, I'm sure someone will, how someone attempts to cosplay this. How do you create the lightning thong, Nick?
It will be done.
Have to cheat and make it out of, like, paper or something.
I'm like, no, unless I touch it and I get electrocuted, unless I can use it to charge my cell phone, it doesn't count.
Oh, God.
You know what? I've heard a lot of people are not happy with this chapter. They don't like this development. I don't mind this all so much. This is a very silly, stupid Bleach chapter, and I guess that's kind of what I like about it. I will say, this final form has told me something, though. I am not attracted to cat girls in the slightest, because this, I look at it and I'm like, this looks just silly. This is preposterous.
See, on the flip side, I think she looks super hot. However, I think the lack of clothes is just ridiculous. It brings the hotness level down quite a bit, because it's just like, why did you need to blast off her clothes? Why is she wearing weird boot things? Did she even have anything on her legs before? Oh, I guess she does. Like,
it blows off her spandex leotard, but for some reason not her, like, thigh-high boot things.
Which are, like, crackling with it. Just, Kubo! Like, you're halfway there for me, buddy! You're halfway there, just... She's not wearing much to begin with. Just let her keep some modesty.
I think also working against this is the fact that this transformation is only possible by having something mysterious injected into your butt against your permission. That's also a detraction from it. It's just such a weird, silly chapter. It's hard to really comment on it without just being like, it is kind of fucked up or hard to show someone out of nowhere inject something weird into her butt without telling her and she turns into this.
Like, I really like Urahara as a character. I just think he's an interesting character, but this, the more I think about it, the more I'm disturbed.
It's also somewhat defeating because, like, in my mind, I'm already like, well, you're not going to win. Asuka Naklabar hasn't revealed his form yet, so obviously whatever turnabout you create with this, he's just going to beat when he releases, and then presumably Urahara will have to be the one to finish it off, revealing that
he's
going to
become a half-nude dog boy.
You know what? If he does that, especially if it requires him injecting something into his ass, I am 100% okay with this, because that is the kind of gender equality we need today.
What kind of dog? Floppy ears or pointy ears?
Like, yeah, definitely floppy ears. I don't know, maybe
you guys are asking
a bulldog.
The wrong questions.
You're right. Will he have a lightning thong?
Lightning maybe thong! Maybe another element. Fire crotch?
I don't want to spend too much more time with this, because we already have another lightning-themed chapter with weird fan service to talk about. Like, right after this.
Alright. It's not a good chapter, but it's fun. Which I guess is, yeah, what I can ask for Leech. Alright, Fairy Tale, chapter 473, Red Lightning. And I spent too much time considering this on the cover page. It's Urza, and she has, like, tattoos across her belly. Is it supposed to spell out something? Because I can clearly see
I actually thought about that, too. I think it's Titania.
Titania. Ah! There you go. I can only read the A.
I could see that.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at you, Nick. Old laser eyes Nick. Hawkeye Nick.
The camel that's right
the
behind
camel,
her.
Yeah. Oh.
What the fuck is it making that face for? What is it supposed
like,
to mean?
Oh, she's so hot. Oh.
I was wondering if it was that or if it was just, I'm a camel.
I think either one fits.
He's photobombing. He's like, this is my chance.
If you look in the background, there's another one there making the exact same facial expression, just drooling. Yeah.
Camels are disgusting creatures, Nick. I'm not going to be shocked if it's just drooling because it's like, I'm hideous.
Why do I exist?
So, last chapter was Wall versus Laxus, and they were having their big epic battle. But by the end of it, Wall had basically done, like, his personality shift transformation, and Laxus had his anti-magic particles attacking his body, and he seemed to be at his very limit. So that's where we start, with Wall literally jet-boosting up to him, and punching him in the chest, then his fingers expand outwards, and more tiny jets pop out and fire out of the back of the hands to punch him even harder. It like, if I don't know if, I'm sure you and Elise at least read Rurouni Kenshin,
yeah.
Where he, Sanosuke had like the folding punches thing, and like his final one was to just like open his fist. This feels like the fourth level beyond that, like, fold, one fold, two, three, and then tiny jetpacks come out and shoot it out more for four. That's why the next level.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that third fold.
The third one is stupid. I remember my friend Frank.
The two fold punch is a real thing.
Yeah, and then the last one's like, and there's still momentum left in my fingertips that I'll really. It's very silly. But
no, because then you completely undo the first fold.
So quick though, Nick. We'll save it for whenever we finally do Rurouni Kenshin. They have a bit more of a fight with,
missiles!
You know, kinda, yeah, fires off a bunch of missiles.
Lasers!
And Wall's even like, you're not dead yet! I still detect laser or life signs from you, so I'm gonna make a railgun and shoot you. And he just keeps blasting him, but all to the contrary, Laxus keeps getting up, even though when it seems like he should be dead. Fortunately, I guess he blasts him with electricity, which is, you know, dragon slayers can use that element to help them, so he uses lightning to keep him going, even when it seems like he should be dead at this point. But Wall even has, like, a system error. He's like, you should be dead now. Time to extermination is expended. You know, system error. But Laxus finally starts to fall, and it's like, oh, I look like I'm finally dead. And, he's falling to the ground, he can't move, and you just hear him screaming, damn it, and Wall's like, hey, you know, don't worry, you know, this is checkmate, if you will, and I'm gonna end this life of yours, and you should thank me, because your pain and suffering's gonna be all gone. And that's when Laxus activates a spell circle around him. I forget the exact name they use for it, the Jutsu Shiki, which is what Siegfried's magic is. Siegfried? Is that his name? I know they call him Freed. I think it's Siegfried. That's Siegfried's magic, though. And activate a big magic circle around him, and that's when Wall's like, fuck you, magic canceling, bitch! And he does it, and that's when Laxus is like, aha! Because he's like, I knew you were going to do that, and I learned this spell from Freed so that you would do this, but because you magically canceled it, everything in this circle has now been magic that's magical has been rendered inert, including my anti-magic particles. So you just saved my life. You just cured my cancer.
Thank you, sir.
This is a really great 2-chapter-long drama about my sickness to have. Ha! Show that not to, asshole.
Yeah.
It's only dragged out for half a chapter.
It took me 2 chapters to cure my magic cancer. But Wall's freaking out. He's like, no, can't process, have failed, personality settings. And that's when Luxus charges at him, and he's, got his light. He's like, oh, I should thank you for saving my life, but I'm going to have to kill you because you hurt my friends. And Wall's just like, he's gone bonkers at this point. He's like an ace attorney witness who you've broken down. He's already had his, like, thing. And he's just screaming. He's like, lightning will never work on me.
I do like how he's, freaking out and defying the personality he set for himself, but there is the note that, like, his system is going up, going, personality setting error.
So, Luxus blasts him, and he's like, this will never work. And then the lightning that comes off of Luxus changes color. It starts looking red and black, which is very unique and new, and even Wall's like, I can't analyze this. What is this? And then we have a flashback. And the first shot, really, in the flashbacks, Mavis in a bikini. I don't know why they had to have this conversation at the fucking water park of all places.
Zero.
I guess. and they're talking about something here. I may just be forgetting this, but I feel like a lot of this is relevant to the Fairy Tale Zero. Because I don't remember this character they're talking about, which I assume is Luxus's father.
He probably showed up during the flashbacks when they explain Zero and Mavis's backstory. But, yeah, presumably we would have recognized him if we read Fairy Tale Zero, which we didn't. So.
Yeah, like, I feel like a lot of this is okay, he is from Zero. So this is really annoying, because this is, like, essentially going into a comic and being like, why is Wonder Woman
here? If you want this to be explained, you'll have to go and buy the Bleach fan book.
Because it basically explains how, like, his father was one of the members of Fairy Tale and, kind of talking about the person he was and how he was somebody that no matter what would stick up for his friends. Even the quote he has that my dream can come later. I intend to protect you no matter what happens, and to trust you no matter what you decide. And Mavis basically like, yeah, you remind me a lot of him. Don't let your mistakes hold you back. That's what makes you just like Yuri. And we cut to this 2-page spread of Luxus punching through a wall with the phrase red lightning. And there's also what I presume is just supposed to be the symbolic image of Yuri also punching him. Again, I don't know who this character is. He's brand new to me.
It's the father-son Kamehameha, Chris. Come on.
No, but it's his great-grandfather.
Yes.
Oh, it's his great-grandfather.
Yeah, because he's Makarov's father.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is someone he's never even met before.
Nope.
All right.
You're just like Yuri, which means I know that you'll always be there. What's the point of this chapter?
And I don't know who's... I guess this is Luxus saying this, or I don't know if it's just the narrator, but it says, lightning that goes beyond lightning. Red, dot, 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 the color of blood.
This makes no sense.
This part is very confusing to me, because I don't quite understand what this is meant to apply. Maybe there's an explanation coming next week to explain, because they say, and this is the part that I think really confused me, when he first does the attack, Wall says, this red, black lightning, I can't analyze it. And I can understand that to a certain extent. Black lightning is God-slaying magic, and perhaps there's some bridge that he created where he was accident. But red magic, or red lightning, that I don't know what that is. There's no, like, red theme to any kind of magic. So I don't know if it's just supposed to be this is an entirely new form of magic, if this is some new power-up, is this the inheritance given to him by his great-grandfather he's never met, is this just some special Omake power that he gained to make you read the spin-off series to understand where it came? I don't understand what he did, essentially. Which is a shame, because I actually sort of like this chapter a lot. Because one of my biggest complaints when it comes to Fairy Tale is that friendship solves everything, except it doesn't really. You just have friends and wins. But this is one of the few times where Luxus's friendship actually mattered, because he used Siegfried's spells, his magic, to essentially create his turnabout. And I'm like, cool, you added an element, you actually implemented your friendship in a tangible way, as opposed to just screaming friendship and getting stronger. Yes, your magic cancer was cured in one chapter, essentially, but at least it was more inventive and kind of unique than just, you know, Brandish being like, I'll just pop in there and get him and shrink it down so it's all gone. So I like that. I thought that was actually really cool and well done. It's just the red lightning part needs explanation to me, because as it is now, I don't quite understand what he did. It just seems like it was a power-up in some fashion. Still look cool, but yeah, I mean, that's the chapter in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I don't really read Fairy Tale, I just read it when I come on the show. So I was pretty lost, and I'm glad to hear that you guys had no idea who this Yuri guy was either, because I was just like, oh, this is pretty cool, this is a neat fight, yeah, uh-huh, and then what the fuck is this? And yeah, why are they at the pool, and what's going on, and this seems important, but I have no idea. And I was like, oh, it's probably because I don't read it, but I see. It's just hero being hero.
Yeah.
I mean, wrapping it all up, when you look at, you know, the last couple of chapters, it's like, okay, this fight was set up well because, you know, Wall took down people who were close to Laxus. Then Wall dominates the fight. He has, you know, a form change. Laxus is dealing with extra stuff, so he's getting his ass kicked. But then he comes up with a good strategy to trick Walt into actually helping him, and he turns the tide of battle because he tricked him, and then he gets, you know, his big power up and he punches him and he wins. It's like, all around, okay, you know, good, solid, short fight between some side characters, and, you know, Laxus gets to do something important. You know, he presumably defeats, you know, a member of the Supreme 12. Unless this is going to drive us, like, Walt's just going to be like, that was another one of my drones!
Yeah, I have another robot! This one's even sexier.
That's what just gonna be. It's just gonna be. That's what just gonna be the photograph machine. You should take your clothes off. Oh no! Wait, that's already taken. I am redundant in this universe.
I can do nothing here but enjoy.
I will go to a world where there is no magic and guys just can't decide what girl they want to bang. I will guide them! Anyway.
So, that Fairy Tale last week.
Was confusing, but I did enjoy the last couple of chapters we got out of this. So, good stuff. Let's move on to Food Wars. Shokugeki no Somo 154, Bearing Fangs. Last time, Soma and Takumi were unable to sit back after the underclassmen associated with Central stepped in and upside-down cross-asshole. And so they've confronted him. We begin this chapter with Megumi freaking out because Soma and Takumi have jumped the barrier and revealed themselves. I do like that second reaction shot of her. Something about it does catch me the right way. And then we cut away to catch up with another of the surveillance groups, Hisako's group, with the two unimportant guys. And yes, we've got the sixth seat, Nene Kinokuni, who is also accompanied by some other members of Central helping her out. An all-girls group.
Looks like Rosie O'Donnell and the same girl from the other group, but in a business suit.
She does have a ponytail, yeah. So Hisako is analyzing, is like, oh, okay, you know. She points out, is like, okay, she's the one who holds the highest seat on the council after the third years, because, you know, she is a sixth seat, but, you know, everyone above her was a third year. So she's pretty important because of that. Essentially, I guess, in the next year, she is the favorite to be the first seat. So, yeah, anyhow, Kinokuni contacts people and says, okay, we're finished here, and then the people in Hall D are like, oh yeah, no, everything's going okay, nothing out of the ordinary, while staring at Yukihira and Takumi having a conversation with upside down neck.
Does this guy have a name yet?
He has a name if you look at the information page. The information page names him before the series does. It's kind of funny.
Rentard? Oh, Rentaro! I was like, Rentard, wouldn't you change that? It's so close.
Oh, God. When Rentaro, basically the judges, Oizumi and Satomi, see that Soma is there and they greet him, so he's like, oh, you're the guy who beat Aizen, huh? And also, you were in the Fall Classic semifinals. What? Are you just here to check us out then? And they say, yeah, well, we figure, you know, we're going to go up against you guys eventually. So, yeah, we were here to scout you out. And Rentaro's like, well, I won't get too cocky around this if I were you. You know how lucky you are since neither of you are in any societies or seminars. You've escaped against competing against me, elite superstar and future pillar of the entire culinary world. Whatever.
Not me, the great Rentard. Rentaro, wait. Shit, I read my name wrong.
I mean... shut up. Yeah, he's like, oh, we're this elites, and not like you commoners, but you stupid family restaurant chefs. Look, oh, I've got this sweet central badge. It actually looks like it's really heavy, actually.
Maybe I should hang it from my other ear to help balance things out.
He's just like going around like, why is everyone standing sideways? He like, I like how he like, he holds it up like, cause I guess this is gonna have to do. He holds it up like this. He's like, we were chosen by Sedra, so I wouldn't get in our way if I was you. And then in the next panel, he's still posing like this.
You see it from the uncool angle.
Yeah, cause he just go like. It's the most undignified pose you could possibly be striking. Maybe if he had, like, the high ground and you were leaning over somebody. But he has to, like, tilt over at the hip. He's, like, so stupid.
Who is he posing to, then?
I don't know!
Because it's not like Soma's that short. Who is he, like... It's a like, shot that made sense in the manga, but when they pull it out and you look to the side, you're like, who is he doing this to? Is there, like, a child behind him that he's shit-talking?
There's just, like, a random five-year-old's wandered out, too. Like, it could be in somewhere, like, we won't let you do what you want to, and there's a five-year-old kid, like, yeah!
You dress like a loser!
Your earring looks stupid, Rentard!
I think you're...
Timmy, don't use that kind of language. But that's his name!
No, you're reading the O as a D. It happens to a lot of people.
He's wearing my pants, Daddy!
Okay. So Takumi talks some trash, and is like, oh, you're throwing around all these words, calling yourself an elite, calling yourself a superstar. And, although he starts off really snooty about it, he says, your continual emphasis of your chosen status sounds less like a statement of fact and more like a desperate denial of your own inferiority. It's like, Jesus Christ! Word count Takumi coming in here trying to get this essay done. Great. Rentaro eventually gets really pissed off at them. He's like, I'll just crush you guys both right here. And then the Hulk guy just grabs him and takes him away. And puts him under his arm. Nope. Play nice with the other kids. And we get actual introductions of these four underclassmen. Rentaro Kusunoki. Excuse me. Then we've got, oh god, I've lost my place. God damn it.
Shigemichi Kimai,
Mea Yanai, and Rui Kaforu. Anyway, so that's everyone. Then we get a big introduction for the next research society that is having its Shokugeki, as Alice and Kurikiba arrive.
It's Alice and Kurikiba, Nick!
I have to say, I actually really like the, I don't know why, but I really like the panel where Alice first walks in.
He has a very cool way of drawing her at times. There's something about her aesthetic that I always think looks cool, and that particular panel kind of emphasizes it well.
I think that part of it might be the fact that we're seeing her longer hair from a different angle.
Seeing it from above, too, kind of makes her have that long elegance to it.
So it was like, oh, what are you doing here? I didn't know you were part of a research society. And I was like, well, 2 years ago, I challenged the captain of the Cutting Edge Cooking Research Society to a shokugeki. I won and made their kitchen's equipment all mine. Apparently, that made me the president of their society, so... So, yeah, she's just like, oh, well, you know, I think that I'll just, you know, do this. Plus, I like being the captain of a research society. You guys just all call me Captain Alice from now on. And I was like, I'm going to do that. So someone's like, oh, that's cool. I get to see you cook for the first time in a while. And Alice says, actually, Rio's going to take the challenge.
I'm like, motherfucker! I'm slapping things off the table. Like, God damn it!
So Kurokiba, you know, steps in, looking fucking bulky in this one panel. Because, I mean, I know that he's, you know, got more muscle definition than a lot of the other guys in the series, but he looks fucking huge in the panel where he's stepping up to take the challenge. So yeah, it's Kurokiba going up against Rintaro. And, Rintaro's like, oh man, well you caught me in a bad mood, so whatever. Oh, you know, I'll just take you out then. And Kurokiba says, well, you can try to crush me, but I'll just crush you even harder! And this fucking steam coming out of his mouth. It's like, good God, dude.
I knew that when he put the headband on, he became a much more intense person. This is like, I get insane when I put the headband on.
This is like Finn Balor's tattoos. Or not.
Oh, that is a good example that 90% of our audience will not get. But that is a spot-on analysis. This is, every so often he puts the full face paint on. When he knows it's an important matchup. Although I would not call Rintaro the important matchup.
Okay, so yeah, it's the final Shokugeki of Hall D for the day. It's going to be Kurokiba taking on this this new challenger, basically. So I guess we'll see what he's made of. Maybe it'll be something to build him up. Maybe it'll be something to build Kurokiba up.
Right now, predictions for both of you. Who wins, Rintaro or Kurokiba?
I think Kurokiba.
I really want Kurokiba to win, so like that's who I'm going to put my vote in for, but I'm afraid that he's going to lose.
It would be damaging, because he's still riding a little bit of momentum from that post-fall tournament arc, where he was one of the three finalists, and he was technically second place, because they did a reel afterwards, he beat Soma. But he hasn't had much to do since, and it'd be kind of a shame if like, the first chance he gets to do something afterwards is a loss. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, well, what are they doing with these guys if it's just to have Kurokiba? Because it's not even like it's a 4-on-4 matchup or something like that. It's just this guy against Rintaro, who is easily the most, you know, star, I guess, of that group. We know about the most about that guy. We've seen the most from him. So I'm kind of, they introduced the other three for a reason. I'm kind of wondering if he'll beat him, maybe through trickery, maybe like they're like, yeah, no, the judges were all impartial and all that, but no one said I couldn't just throw like diarrhea into your soup right before you served it or something. Like something along those lines, and maybe that's like some kind of trick to get like a 4-on-4 matchup or something like that. Because I realized as we were reading this chapter, I was like, there's way too much of a similarity between them for Alice not to have a match against Mayana. Or Yanai, whatever her name is, the pigtail girl.
Yeah, like, I hear that.
I feel like those two, they're destined to have a Valley Girl matchup.
Well, we'll see what happens, I guess.
I really hope that Kurokiba doesn't lose. I want to say, I think Sasaki-san said this on the Jump podcast. He suggested that Rintaro's tattoo is actually like a sticker or a temporary tattoo.
Oh, he's just a big poser?
Yeah, and I think that'd be amazing. That would just... It just seems like, from what little we know of his character, it just seems so appropriate.
Like, he's like, his earring is actually like a clip-on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, this isn't even my real hair, and he pulls it off. It's just like a very sensible crew cut. And these sleeves actually unroll into full sleeves. I'm sorry, I'm a sham.
I just have no confidence, and this helps me, you know.
Oh, God.
You know what all my cooking style is? I'm good with salt. Everybody's good with salt, but that's supposed to be my thing.
Alright.
He's just back on. He's like, bring it, asshole!
I guess we'll talk a little bit about the Jumpstart series that we had this week. Kimetsu no Yaiba. I'm gonna keep this short because we're already running kind of long. But basically, it's about this... pardon me. This kid in, I guess medieval Japan?
Seems like.
One day, he ends up having to spend the night in someone else's home instead of with his family. And then when he arrives at his home, he sees that his family's basically been slaughtered. except for his sister, who is still alive. Nezuko is his sister, and so he, you know, he carries her on his back, and he's carrying her through the snow. He's like, I gotta go get her to a doctor. I've gotta, you know, get there. But then suddenly she awakens, and she's got these sharp fangs, and she's, you know, howling like a demon, and she tries to attack him. But he manages to hold her off long enough until basically a samurai appears. And he is totally, totally not an Uchiha. But they're like that. No way he's an Uchiha. Yeah. But he's a demon slayer. He's got, like, demon slayer emblazoned on his pommel of his sword and stuff. And he's trying to kill Nezuko. And her brother's like, no, don't do that. You know, she's my sister. But, you know, don't do that. And he's like, well, she's turning into a demon. She's been, you know, attacked by a demon. She's been bitten by a demon. That's the demon killed your whole family. So she's going to transform into a demon. And they have a fight, which basically the brother loses outright, but he observes that the sister is actually trying to protect him. She's regained enough of her control that she's trying to protect him rather than just eating him. And so he decides to spare them both after knocking her out. And he's like, okay, well, I'll leave you to this then. And but although he does basically put a bit in her mouth, which is probably good planning, so she won't, you know, try to eat anyone. And he's like, oh, you should go visit Urokudaki Sakonji, who lives in the fields of Mount Sugiri, and tell him that I, Tomioka Gyu, sent you. And then he leaves. So this is an interesting little story in this. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to get out of an ongoing series from this, but I thought it was interesting enough. I thought it was a simple enough story, and I did like the way that the confrontation played out. I did actually find myself getting really invested in it as I was reading it. So,
I think it's an interesting first chapter. I'm very partial to stories with demons in them, so I definitely enjoyed it. But I did love it, but I am very interested to see how it plays out.
I like the writing in it. I'm not crazy on the aesthetic. I'm not big into, like, the very traditional Japanese. It's the same thing with Neuromago, things like that. But I still enjoy it. Although, I thought what he inserted into her mouth was some, like, holy scroll or something like that. I didn't realize it was meant to be, like, I guess some kind of gag. And I'm like, man, she could just take it out. Like, it's like you knocked her out or anything like that. You see her holding hands later on. Why don't you just, like, rip this out? I'm like, I'm just going to eat your face now.
Maybe it is the Nora seal. I don't know.
There it is. But now, we'll see what happens from it. I don't know anything about the mangaka, though. Is this anyone?
This is his first.
Okay, this is his first series. All right, well, a good first showing, at least, so happy to see more.
Okay, let's move on to My Hero Academia, number 78, Whirling Chaos. So Deku has delivered the message to Mandalay from Eraser, Eraser... Oh, pardon me.
Jesus, Nick, you didn't even try to hide that one.
Oh, God. Who has given permission to all the students to fight, although at the very start of the chapter, Eraser is thinking to himself, well, fuck, I forgot to tell him that he should, after delivering that message, immediately head for safety, because, Jesus Christ, he needs to rest. He's going to collapse. And also, Coda is really upset because of the way he was treating Deku earlier, Eraser says he'll be fine. You know, it's, you know, he protected you. And he has no intention of dying. So, you know, once all this is over, you know, don't apologize to him. Just thank him for what he did. Which, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
More fighting between Tiger and Mandalay and the villains. And Deku also says, as he's dashing by, oh, there's one more thing I need you to relay. Catchan's one of the targets, so you use your telepathy for that. And she's like, who the fuck is Catchan? But he's already run off.
I had to stop for him. I was like, who is Catchan? Oh, right, Bakugo. I forgot that's his other name.
Mm-hmm. One of the big-lipped villain is like, oh, shit, I should go and kill that kid. And he dashes after him. But the lizard guy throws a knife and is like, don't touch him! And...
Calls him Big Sis Mag.
Yeah.
I guess maybe... I don't know. I didn't know what that was meant to imply.
So they get in a confrontation over it, because although they have, you know, come together, they have differing ideals on what they're doing. And Spinner, the lizard guy, says, look, that's something, you know, that Shigaraki, you know, has to deal with. Stain went out of his way to save that brat. That must mean he's got what it takes to be a real hero. And when it comes to Stain's will,
I thought it was such a cool moment, too, where it's like, oh yeah, I forgot there's, like, some members within this villain group who are, like, only there because they're super big Stain fans, and just like, no, this guy earned Stain's respect, so he's cool in my book, and, like, as he's in this big epic speech, just gets fucking dropkicked by a cat, going, bah!
Remembering that they're in the middle of a fight scene. But Mandalay, despite not knowing who Kat-Chan is, she does send out the message, oh, you know, the student who is known as this needs to avoid battle. So, you know, don't move on your own, try to avoid battle. Okay. Yeah. So, meanwhile, Todoroki and Bakugo are fighting and lugging, I forget the guy's name, I think it's the tail guy around as well.
It's not the tail guy. The tail guy is the one, or maybe it...
I don't see a tail, and I don't think he can retract, so...
I think it's one of the Class B kids.
Yeah, I think so.
Because the four-armed guy is the one who saves Deku at the end. Mm.
So, Todoroki's like, well, didn't you hear that? You know, you shouldn't charge in recklessly. And Bakugo's like, what are that fucking Deku going through this time? God damn it, first they say fight, now they say don't fight! Come on!
I like Bakugo, though.
Meanwhile, they are fighting the weird S&M guy, who we learn is an escaped death row inmate. Oh my.
So creepy!
Moonfish!
And he can extend his teeth out.
So
like, his
creepy.
Teeth are stretched out and, you know, jag into the ground. Like
it's blade. Not just that his teeth stretch out, his teeth stretch out and branch out. Because you can clearly see, like, single lines branching out into multiple pads. You're like, what a horrifyingly awesome power this is.
And the way that he's, you know, strung himself up in the air, because, you know, he's, you know, pointing his teeth downward. He's, like, using them like spider legs while his body is just, you know, hanging upside down on top of them.
Visually, one of the most awesome powers... As the moment I start to think about, like, this is one of the most disturbing things, I think, Neo wishes he was this unnerving.
And Todoroki is warning him, he's like, okay, you know, don't use your explosions, because they can cause fires, and Bakugo's like, I know! And Todoroki is trying to analyze situations, like, okay, if we run away from this, we're going to run into the gas, so this is a trap they're trying to set up. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place, essentially. Meanwhile, Tetsutetsu and Kendo are making their way through the gas.
Tetsutetsu!
Tetsutetsu's like, yeah, we can kick ass, yeah! And, you know, they also, Kendo is like, okay, look, you know, there's thicker gas here than when we started off, which means we're actually heading into some sort of a vortex. You know, it's swirling around some sort of origin point, like a typhoon, so at the center of it must be the person who's actually controlling it. And she warns, okay, you know, these gas masks, they've got a time limit on them, and it's going to go down faster the thicker the gas we have to deal with. So Tetsutetsu is like, okay, then. All right, let's just make a bad dash for the center and kick some butt, then. And she's like, I guess.
She's like, you're already going. I mean, I don't know why you asked it like it was a question.
But then he gives this, you know, like, all right. You know, this is what's causing tremors for Shiozaki and the rest. I don't like it. It pisses me off. Let's freaking do this! And she's like, yeah, let's do it.
She's not only that, she's like, you know, he's so headstrong, but I can't say I don't like that about him. It's shipping, Nick! It's right there! You know, like the 19th most tertiary characters in the series getting paired up.
I really like this moment between these two, because it's like, I know barely anything about these two characters.
If Tetsutetsu didn't have the name he did, I would give not even a single fuck about him.
But he's got, like, the greatest name of the series!
It really is. Tetsutetsu's amazing.
So Darth Vader gas mask guy, who is causing, of course, the gas, senses that Tetsu Tetsu and, bleh, pardon me, fuck, what was her name? I already forgot it.
God, Gendo?
Gendo, yes.
What is her power, by the way?
I can't remember. So he senses that they're coming, and so I love this moment, because he's like, all right, there's a couple of them coming. I'd expect no less from an elite school. But unfortunately for them, no matter how great their quirks, they're only human. And he pulls out a fucking gun! It's a fucking pistol! And so, you know, Tetsu Tetsu is charging, and he's like, I found you! He's gonna punch him! And the guy just pulls out a gun and shoots him! Blam! We don't see it, because we cut away to the very edge of the gas cloud. But yeah, I love that reaction. It's like, I've come through your vortex and I've got the gas mask, so I'm immune to your quirk. And you're just like,
are you immune to bullets? He's like, I technically am, I think.
So yeah, I was really caught off guard by that. I was like, that's freaking awesome.
It is. And the way it's drawn too is so cool. Like just pulling it out of it. Like fucking with the glove and everything. Like, no matter how great the Hercs are, still human.
So Deku hears the gunshot and he moves in that direction. And he's like, oh, I wonder if Kachan's there and stuff. But suddenly, a shadowy claw emerges from the forest and attacks him. And Deku, he's unable to react in time because of his injuries. They're paralyzed with pain, I guess. But Shoji appears. Shoji, able to grow multiple weird attachments and stuff. I barely remember this guy, but I do remember him. Mostly because he's got Kakashi hair.
Isn't the guy who usually has four arms, though? That's the way he's usually seen?
Yeah, but he can grow extra ones.
Okay.
I think that he can, like, grow, like, attachments and, like, I believe, fall off? I can't remember. And he's pretty heavily wounded. Like, one of his default four hands doesn't look like it's a hand anymore, basically.
You can see it. It's in the flashback panel. You can see it's been basically chopped off. It's lying on the ground.
Oh, so that was the hand that we saw Moonfish eating?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, he'll be fine. But, yeah. So presumably they ran to Moonfish before Todoroki and Bakugo did. Well, not presumably, we know they did. So they ran to him before, they managed to get away. But, yeah. They ran into a bit of a problem. Shoji says, alright, I took the hit for us, but I ended up triggering his quirk, even though he tried to control it. So, yeah, if you want to get by him and go deal with what's in the gas cloud, you're going to have to deal with this first. And Deku remembers what Tokoyami, told him earlier, which is, the darker it is, the more ferocious my quirk attacks, but then the beast is hard to control. And we get this huge two-page spread of Tokoyami in the middle of this shadowy maw. This, like, creature of darkness is surrounding him, and he's, like, inside the mouth. Tokoyami is warning them, you've got to get away from me because it's going to kill you. But
it looks really cool.
Yeah.
That is, without a doubt, one of the coolest two-page spreads I've seen in a while, and without your permission, Nick, I've already added it to the list for the year-end recap of best two page spread, because that shit's just so awesome. It just looks so cool. Seeing that it's not even like, not only that it's this giant maw that he's within, but he still has the shadow itself still on him, still giving him that face, too, and like the claws outstretched, really just looks like such an awesome pose. And I'm excited. This is one of the characters I wanted to see more about, and clearly we're going to get more from him. He's kind of like this story's Hulk in a way, a little bit. Like, a power he can't control. Like, I have to equate everything to Marvel. I'm like, Deku's kind of like our Captain America. And, you know, obviously Todoroki's a little bit like our Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord.
Oh, Brawla brings up a good point. It's kind of like a Berserk.
I liked my Hulk comparison better.
Yeah, whatever. It's like, gets his armor. What's that armor called? God, it's been so long since I read any Berserk.
I can't recall.
But it's, yeah, no, that, I agree. It's very similar. But what a cool spread! Oh, but I feel really bad for Tokoyami. How sucky is that?
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens here. I guess if someone's able to help him control it, then maybe it's not going to be so bad. But it's kind of like, oh, wow, in a day where things are already kind of going bad for our heroes, more things are kind of going bad along the way.
Oh, the chat says the armor from Berserk is the Berserker armor.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I do think this is a very appropriate chapter title as well. Whirling Chaos, because there's a whole bunch of shit going down all over the place. And it's not, I like how it's not just the villains that they have to deal with now, too. So. Brief note on Isekoi. Tsugumi realizes she loves Raku. The end. Okay.
Go, Tsugumi! You're number one in my heart.
You just have to send in 1,000 postcards now.
And then she can somehow win the popularity poll and confuse everybody.
I'm okay. Saving those postcards for Osamu again.
You're the one who keeps them up at the top of the list. You're doing God's work.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Let's do One Piece, Chapter 816, Dog versus Cat. Frankie's crew in Water 7 now knows that he has a super awesome robot form. So.
It is, and he did it. He finally became a robot. I like seeing Polly again, and Lulu, and Talston,
and a rabbit. I don't remember that rabbit.
No, it's the one. I can't remember its name, but it's the one that hung out with the little girl all the time. Okay. Had some wacky sound it made, but I can't remember that either. There were a lot of side characters in Water 7.
So last time, Brooke and Robin and Frankie fell asleep trying to intercept Kinemon and Kanjuro. They woke up this time and run off to try and intercept them again.
We all fucked up so bad!
Brooke's got a really weird running animation, too.
Yeah. Remember, his legs move so fast, that's how he can walk across water.
Okay. Let's see here. God. So the monkey that was with them arrives ahead of the two samurai and alerts everyone in the village, saying, "It's a emergency. Samurai are upon us. Samurai are among us."
I love these so much. They're so great. Oh, it's so dumb. So great.
He's a monkey.
It seems like such a chimple joke, though, you know?
He says, I think his little catchphrase thing in Japanese is something like "disaru" and "saru" being monkey.
Right,
so.
Right.
So they're just emergency like,
monkey puns.
The emergency makes me laugh every time, and I don't know why.
So everyone suddenly mobilizes because they know the samurai are coming. And meanwhile, Kanjuro and Kinemon have no idea what's going on. They're like, oh, what's going on there? Okay, well, yeah. Alright. And then suddenly Momonosuke just appears in front of them. He's like, oh, you're here, yay! And they're like, oh, where's Luffy and everyone? Momonosuke says, well, you know, I don't know. I have been unable to be at ease since arriving here, and so I've been lying and sleeping in my room alone. Like, oh, okay. So they're basically completely ignorant of what the fuck's going on, apparently. Meanwhile, the entire town is panicking. Nami's boobs are big in this one panel. She gets, like, impossible anatomy in this one panel. Like, freaking waist that big, boobs this big. Like, 2 inches above them. That poor girl's spine, I swear. Cat Viper has basically mobilized the forces and headed to the main town. Like, it's like the mobilization of an army, basically. And they're all contacting everyone. It's like, where are they? You know, can you see them? And so on and so forth. What the fuck happens here? I don't actually get, really.
Which panel are we on?
Well, they panic when they're like, oh no, they just crossed paths.
Because, remember, the Cat Viper and Dog Storm don't see each other. They're on opposite spectrums. You know, one's morning, one's night. And they don't see each other because they're supposed to hate each other in a natural kind of dogs, cats kind of hate each other way.
Yeah, they said something like, oh, if they were ever to meet, like, it'd be destruction.
Yeah, they can't stand each other. And the only reason they were even kind of, you know, appreciable during the Jack fight is because they had a mutual enemy.
Okay. I somehow missed all that. So the Straw Hats take advantage of this distraction to tackle the samurai. And I like how, like, Kondro and Kiyomaru are, like, being squished up against each other. It's like, no, we gotta hide you. And Nami just holding Momonosuke.
And he's all blushing because he's like, oh, a pretty girl's touching my lips.
So, yes, Dogstrom and Cat Viper do confront each other. And they're like, you look even uglier than before. And you have one less leg than I remember. Good comeback. And so, yeah, the Straw Hats are paying because of, like, you know, remembering, or rather, I guess it's just the, I guess that they're just remembering, well, when they reacted, like, when they were being tortured and stuff, as they're, you know, observing each other, you know, like, oh, yeah, you lost a paw, you know, what's done to you, you know, and stuff like that.
I love Dogstorm's bust, though. He's like, oh, you lost a paw? Clearly hasn't stopped you from eating lasagna, though, I see. Like, oh, it's so cold.
It's lasagna.
He's like, you know? He's like, you're crippled and fat. Boom.
But they're remembering being tortured by Jack and his goons. And at one point, though, eventually, like, you know, Cat Viper actually... like, drew their attention away from Dogstrom's men. He's like, why don't you, you know, try taking me on, you garbage excuse for men? You know, you torture me, come on, you know. Let's see how flimsy your spears are. Try sticking them in me instead. And so they're getting into a fight over this, and they end up actually clashing over it. They, you know, clash weapons against each other. And suddenly, Kinemon, you know, immediately throws off all the Straw Hats, holding him down, and he's like, stop this immediately! Stop it! And they immediately look at him, and the Straw Hats are like, oh no, they're going to kill him, no. And Kondro jumps up as well, but Kinemon says, no, Kondro, Momo, you stay back. Or I think Usopp says that, I'm not sure. I don't know who the word bubble's staying there, talking to. Whatever. Kinemon says, you know, I am a servant of the Kogetsu clan, I am Kinemon, I am here in search of my compatriot Raizo, have they come to your land? And... yeah, Usopp and Chopper are freaking out. It's like, no, it's because he's not here that this place was destroyed and ruined! And suddenly, Cat Viper and Dogstrom turn towards him, and they start crying while remembering, you know, I swear, you know, there is no Raizo here. If there were such a man here, I will, you know, spill my guts out. And they suddenly bow in front of Kinemon, and all of the Zo are bowing as well. And all the Straw Hats are completely shocked by this. Which, I love the range of expressions that they have. Because Luffy and Nami are like, and Zoro's like,
What's shocking to me is Zoro's expression. You don't get reactions out of that like him very often. He's usually the guy who's just like, okay.
You know, Robin's, you know, reacting kind of,
She's shocked.
Yeah, she's shocked, but you know, then Chopper and Usopp are both freaking out, their eyes are bulging out, and Frankie's just like,
Frankie's already crying, he's like, I know there's a sad flashback coming up!
So Kiyomaru reacts to this, like, oh! Because they say, you know, they immediately say to him, Raizo is alive and well. And Kinemon's like, oh, I'm glad to hear that. You know, Usopp says, wait a minute! So Raizo is here? He has been the whole time, and you knew, and no one says anything. Like, but you're all gonna die, and your millennium old city is going to be destroyed. And yeah, Cat Viper says, we're sorry we had to hide this from you, but since long ago we have been like brothers to the Kogetsu clan of Wano. No matter what should fall, we would never sell a comrade to an enemy.
So cool!
This was such a fucking awesome chapter. It's just all just, you know, one, like, conversation, basically. But the build-up to this moment, seeing what the fuck happened to their village and what they went through, and seeing the after effects of it, you know, seeing these two, you know, old and very powerful warriors have horrible crippling injuries. And then suddenly the samurai show up and you're like, oh no, they must resent the samurai. And they're like, no, they are great friends. And it's just their great loyalty that caused them to deny everything and deny ever even being friends with them. I love this chapter.
It's very much an Oda style of storytelling of kind of betraying the reader's expectations a little bit. You expect there to be some horrible reason why they hate the samurai beyond just, you know, they were tortured for it. And then it comes out like, no, we actually have a very sincere loyalty. And I feel there's definitely going to be a flashback of some kind in the very near future to explain all of this. And I don't know why, in my mind, I'm already getting kind of flashbacks to Skypiea when we got the Noland flashback and kind of saw his story with the Skypeans and the Golden Bell and all that. I'm expecting something very cool and tragic to come up soon, but I like this a lot. I know some people got a little concerned. They were like, yeah, it's kind of came out of nowhere. I'm like, but that's Oda's style of storytelling, is he kind of plays with your expectations a lot, and if we didn't, you know, already have the knowledgeable faith that he's going to deliver on this twist, maybe I'd be concerned or something like that, but this makes 100% sense to me.
Oh, and also this was a twist that had been built up to be a twist. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I really liked it.
Very cool chapter. And it's off next week, because...
Yep.
Because it was a very cool chapter.
Yeah. Oda put a lot of work into this one, so
he needs
a break.
Guys, he needs a break.
Okay. Toriko, Gourmet 358, Nasty Neo.
Nasty Neo.
And the West Coast Gang, or what the fuck ever. So, basically, we get a bit of, you know, like, okay, the Nitro is actually reacting to Neo fucking stuff up in this chapter to start stuff off with, and how, basically, because Neo was left unchecked, he wrecked everything, and not only destroyed the world that he was left on, but went to multiple worlds somehow. Don't know how that happened, but it did, I guess. Yeah. And basically, they explained that, like, yeah, they caught Neo a bunch of times and killed him a bunch of times. They, like, blew up planets. And he was caught in the Big Bang explosions of a new star forming. That's not how the Big Bang works. There was only one Big Bang. But yeah, it was basically, you know, if whenever a star formed or whenever it was a supernova, Neo would get caught in that. Or he would fight against superior races. He would die multiple times. He just kept on coming back. And eating more. And killing more and stuff. And we get this rather grim sequence of, like, this one weird alien creature coming home is like, I caught a bunch of fish today. The people at my village will be overjoyed. And hill of corpses! And then the guy goes, ah! And then you eats him from behind. He's like, well, okay. Neo does look way creepier when he's just this weird pulsating mass with a face in the middle of it, as opposed to little shrimpy thing that a dinosaur crushes and breathes fire on.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm just glad that that fisherman wasn't an old man and that his fish weren't peanuts, because if it was, I'd be like, it would have broken me, Nick. I couldn't stand it. Omori needs to get his peanuts, Nick.
So the Nitros then come to this one planet. They find these survivors, referred to, and they're like, we're going to take you to this new planet in a nearby solar system, and we're going to start preparing that planet, and we're going to have all of you put to work there. And Deiji says, yes, you know, that was when we were forced into hard labor as slaves of the Blue Nitro. At that time, our ancestors didn't know the Blue Nitro's true goal, the fearsome goal of awakening Neo. So Sunny's like, Neo's gross! Neo's nasty! And immediately everyone just starts, like, you know, chatting, basically.
Okay, because remember, this is a story being told to four different groups of people in four different locations. So this is all four of those groups reacting to what seems like different parts of the story as well.
So Komatsu's group with, you know, Zebra and Sunny and Coco and everyone else, they just immediately start chatting away, and Gigi's like,
But I just told them that super scary story about how Neo's so terrifying.
It is a little weird when you're like, I don't know if you guys quite understand. It's not like this thing is strong. This is incomprehensibly persistent, utter obliteration. Like,
this thing is basically Doomsday, because it keeps dying, coming back to life stronger. You know Doomsday? Doomsday killed Superman, you know?
Like, it just retconned him back. You know, like, eventually they'll give Thor's hammer back to the dude. Like, what, Thor's a woman now? But it is, it's almost like...
You know, it's like how Captain America was black for a while. Wait, what?
Don't worry, he's white again. Whew! Woo! I was worried!
Yeah, and then we cut away to where Joey was telling the story to Midora. He's like, see, you know, a single cell will show a completely different world. A food paradise that stretches on forever. That is what Neo taught Acacia. And Midora's like, eh.
He really is. He's just like, cool.
Don't really care.
Cool story, bro.
I only have interest in a 1 meter radius round dinner table.
Can he be more fae? Can we make Midoriya like, I only have interest in a 1 meter radius round dinner table. He just does weird sounds. Everyone's like, I don't like this guy as much now.
And then we get...
Makes sense, he fights with his tongue, Nick. He should be weird.
Then we get Jiro having the story told him.
Who would win the fight between the dude who fights with his tongue and the dude who fights with his teeth?
The teeth guy, man. Bite off that tongue.
And if their attacks overlap, does that mean they're kind of like French kissing each other?
Then we get Jiro reacting to this, and he's just like, well, I'll just teach Neo the real way to instill fear in others. And then Toriko, I guess, finishes talking about what the Wolf King told him? Yeah, he says, it's got to be delicious to revive a guy like that. Got to. So that's Toriko's story. Neo sounds kind of weird. Love to eat him.
It is so weird.
Did he figure that out from the Wolf King's piss?
Yes.
That's... Dude, Toriko, you're so fucking weird. Yeah.
Well, you know, like, sometimes, like, if a wolf pisses in an area, deer's like, well, I know not to go in there. It's the same principle, just, you know, with elaborate details and character development and a couple notable NPCs.
Let me see. Yes, it smells like 3 weeks after that happened.
He's just like,
what the hell?
So wait, in the book, Tom Hardy didn't kill his kid, he just took his gun? Oh man, that plot goes way differently. It's just like it's just him hovering over the Revenant piss version of the book and the Revenant piss version of the movie. Oh man, that definitely seems like that's a weird conclusion.
So, meanwhile, Don Slime is fighting a Neo blob thing, saying he's gonna kill it, and I'm right back to Neo's not intimidating because it's got the old scrawny Neo face randomly on this pulsating mass. This is like, you can't be intimidated by that nose. It's so punchable. Like, you can't.
Don Slime looks super cool though in this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's like rows and rows of shark teeth.
Mm-hmm. And his awesome, not sure what I would call it, his all over face facial hair. But yeah, that's Toriko for this week. It was okay, I guess. Let's do World Trigger to wrap things up.
Before we get this started, I just want to mention a lot of people know that the border briefing file is coming out in Japan, and it's going to be like a data book, and a lot of people have asked me if this is going to bring it out. The answer is no. I'm sorry, guys.
No, what if we all write to Viz saying we want the book?
There's always the potential, but data books are super hard to bring out because they're super dense and they take insane amounts of work, and they're just migraines for everybody. From what I hear, World Trigger doesn't really sell that well, so...
Here
maybe
if
it sold like hotcakes, maybe we'd have a chance, but at the moment, don't hold your breath. I'm really sorry, guys. I really want this too, but
it's a bit too niche for them to make that decision currently.
So what if I kidnapped the family of the editor-in-chief and held them ransom for the book to be brought over?
Do you mean Andy's family? Like English Shonen Jump?
Yeah, well, whoever's causing the look, I'm comfortable with kidnapping whoever I need to make sure this World Trigger book gets brought. just give me his address while you're at it. All
right. It's World Trigger, Chapter 131, Galapala, Part 10. Yonea and Miwa are fighting against Blobby Dude. Blobby Dude is his name now. I know his name is Coscaro, as indicated at the start of the chapter, but he is Blobby Dude. It's easier to remember than Coscaro.
How long have we had World Trigger where the character page at the front has not featured Osamu or Yuma?
Too long.
Not like Black Clover, where Yuno just shows up in there all of a sudden. Yuno's in this chapter, right?
Hey, it was flashback to him. Come on.
Alice? Well, Rebecca.
Rebecca? Well, she's not coming back then. She's not an important character.
Right. Nobody's died this week in Jump. I haven't had a chance to die. I don't know how to think. And yeah. So, Wall kind of died. Wall's totally dead, Chris. Never coming back. Okay. Anyhow, they're fighting against Blobby Dude, and Coscara is using his Blobby stuff in order to also use it offensively instead of just as a shield to mess with their weapons. And he manages to, because they're fighting indoors, and he manages to get a sneak attack from behind a bookshelf, and he gets Yonea's leg and hand with it. And Yonea can't grip his spear anymore because he's basically just got this, like, blob surrounding his hand. So, cool thing. But Miwa basically indicates, okay, it looks as though he's using something similar to tie it to the lead bullet. You know, it forces a disadvantageous try-in effect on the enemy. They're like, okay, we've got to, avoid the liquid shield. And it's like, oh, that's okay. You know, I've fought a do-not-touch enemy before. Remembering, what was his name? Irene, yeah. So they go on the attack. Yonea basically cuts the ceiling apart so it'll fall on top of Coscaro. Meanwhile, Miwa shoots lead bullets and such in order to distract him, and they try to bring the place down top of him. But Coscaro escapes outside, and he's like, oh no, they already know that Noikokaira, which means Black Wall, is vulnerable against non-trying attacks, so I can't actually, use it to protect myself. So he decides to leave the building so that they can't use the surroundings to their advantage. And he's like, okay, well, I need some time to set up a counterattack. But then all of a sudden, Miwa says, I have to ask you something. Was it your country that invaded this world and slaughtered civilians 4 years ago, or was it any other country that you know of?
Oh, he does it so cold, though. It's so, like, collected. Like, I need to ask you something. Are you the one who invaded, or...
He doesn't sound like that.
He seems so collected right there. I imagine he sounds like an old gangster or something, or an old detective. Like, one more thing. I need to ask you something there, kid. Was it your country, or did someone else take it on the arches over here? What's going on now? Bee's knees? Charleston? Prohibition? Volstead Act?
So, Coscaro goes... That is, and then he just attacks them from behind again. He has some of the slime actually attack them out of the room that they just left as well. And he manages to catch them a little bit again. Gets some on Miwa's hand. And Coscaro just says, I don't have to answer your question, but I should warn you, it's not wise to chat while fighting. And Miwa just says, while fighting? Don't be stupid. The moment you got up here, it was all over.
That is, like, the coolest line. I have not been a Miwa fan before, but that line's cold as fucking ice.
And his face is just, like, devoid of, like, any emotion. He's just like, yeah, you're good.
His fucking swagger, too, the way he does it, like, fighting. Oh, you thought this... Nah, this was over.
And, he gets cut to pieces because Jin... sees them from, a mile away, and used his Black Trigger in order to get them. So,
yep.
So he's like, oh fuck, it's the long distance slash that we heard about. So, yeah, so he realizes that Miwa didn't actually really want an answer from him. He was just, trying to buy some time so that Jin could set up his attack. He's like, well, shit. Although, Miwa then steps forward and says, all right, we're going to take him into HQ. And we're going to continue our talk over there. Okay. Then we get some catching up with some other folks who are still fighting. Kyosuke and Reiji are, kind of talking while they're fighting some of the other neighbors and shooting their awesome Gatling guns. Yeah. Basically, they're turning the tide about. They're winning, essentially.
I love that they're so like, hey, so what's up? I guess our protégés are like fighting. Hey, you want to use our ultimate attacks? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're talking
so
like
about it.
They're like, isn't it cool that Osamu and Yuma and the group are going to get to have their match proceed regularly as planned? Meanwhile, there's just like death and battle all around them. And they're just like, yeah, it's super great. If they lost that point, it'd basically be like if our Sports Center manga thing was going on while a battle's happening. And we're like, well, you see what's great about this is that he's going to be able to get the points necessary to get into the Christmas Bowl.
Except then John Madden pulls out two large Gatling guns. Oh my god, it's so cool. This is something that's like so different from what we've seen from World Trigger so far, because Reiji just like, okay. It just like turns into fucking Gundam heavy arms.
He's basically like, I'm War Machine.
Gatling gun on this hand, two-barreled shotgun on this hand, freaking shoulder-mounted missile launchers and lasers, and then... Oh, God.
Well, we do and know, because they mentioned this is what the leader of Gallipola's group is using. He's using the full arms, and when he activates his... Yeah, they were like, doesn't look like Reiji's full arms. And now we know what his is, which is basically a more prototype.
Way cooler!
It's way cooler, with the exception of the arms with the shields on them. Very practical, but there's something very dorky about, like, the arms that are just, like, untangibly hanging out
they're
that have shields on them.
They're not hanging, they're floating around. Like the Gundam Mercurius.
Yeah. Like, I feel like those need
that
to be, like...
That wasn't actually a Gundam. The Mercurius mobile suit.
Like, they need to be, like, Muppet arms. Like, when he's excited, the arms are just, like... He's, like, Kermit the Frog. Like, also, I love that he has, like, clearly, like, an arm-mounted Gatling gun. And in this other arm, he's like, I'm just gonna hold a shotgun.
This isn't actually part of the full arm.
I have a shotgun.
Oh, God. Oh, and Kyosuke's is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We've seen Geist before. I think when he was fighting against...
It must have been when... Yeah.
But this is a different... shift. I don't think he used gunner shift before.
It's a bigger gun.
And so, I guess these take so much try-on that it will basically sap everything they have, because once they do it, they're like, oh, a countdown started. You've got, like, 3 minutes to kick ass.
Do you need 3 minutes? No.
So, the two Gallipola operators are like, fuck! All our stuff's getting blown up. Yomi indicates, well, they're trying to advance. It seems that they're spending all their try in order to take out all of our stuff. We gotta deploy more dogs and so on. And the other operator, whose name I don't remember, because...
Reggie.
Reggie. So, he's like, well, shit. God, we're just gonna lose. Then there was like, we just have to withdraw because we're just going to have pointless losses at this point. Right? He's like, damn you, Meaden, how dare you! If that's how it's gonna be, I'll handle this myself.
I like Reggie a lot because, I don't know, he just seems like the type, like, oh, I can take care of this, and he's gonna, like, go and slip on a banana peel or something. Like,
he does kind of have
just
that
feeling I get with him, like, all the time, and I'm like, you try really hard, buddy, you can do it. Oh, no, you can't.
He doesn't look like... His design does not carry enough dignity and confidence for him to succeed at something awesome, does it? Like this chapter, too. Couple of cool moments in it. So, good stuff.
That was an awesome chapter. Like, just the shot... The mere concept of Jin sniping what's his name with a sword from a mile away is just so awesome.
Koskera.
Yeah. Great chapter.
So, and he does it, he seemingly does it like, I'm on the way to take care of something else, but I'll help you out for a second. Anyway, see ya. Oh, Jin, like, he's not my favorite character by any stretch. Like, not even in my top 20, but he's so cool! If, oh, he has these moments, and I'm just like, oh, Doki Doki, oh, Jin.
Oh my.
If I challenged you right now to list your top 20 in World Trigger, could you?
Do I have to list them in order?
Yes!
We don't have time.
No, we'll save that for next time.
Right. That's going to do it for the recap. So let's finish this up by naming our favorites of the week. Audience chose One Piece pretty clearly. At one point, it was over 50%, although My Hero Academia got its usual surge, and so One Piece is down to a measly 43.5%.
There's a healthy amount of votes for World Trigger as well.
Mm-hmm. And Kimetsu no Yaiba also got some love. So, but my series of the week has got to be One Piece. I mean, World Trigger was really cool, but One Piece just blew me away with the twist, the drama of the scene, and the awesome image of suddenly everyone's bowing at the Straw Hats are like, wait, what? And then just to pound it home, Usopp saying, but your village, and you were injured and horribly, and they're like, we would never betray a friend. So good. Annalisa, you have a series of the week?
Don't hate me, guys, but it's Black Clover, because I know you don't like it, but just Asta throwing his swords away, I thought was so cool, and jumping through that ridiculously sized portal and punching the guy in the face. I thought that was really cool. Plus, Yami's battling is really cool. Yami's one of my favorite characters, so really all the chapters recently have been super awesome to me, so that's my chapter of the week.
Fair enough. My chapter of the week is My Hero Academia. I thought it was clear-cut the best chapter of the week. Super exciting, super thrilling. That two-page spread at the end is one of the best I've seen in a while. One of those sort of two-page spreads that I'm always going to go back and kind of compare to. A lot of just great moments all around in that chapter. Weird, cool moonfish powers. Just an awesome chapter.
My weekly MVP... I had not thought of it when we started doing this episode. I was a little bit pressed for time. I had some other stuff come up and did not have a chance to choose them ahead of time. But as we talked about it, I pretty easily came to the decision it's got to be Miwa, because that was just a really cool moment. You know, using his general...
his racism.
His general xenophobia and assholery to his advantage in an awesome moment. I love that. So.
Oh yeah, it's 100% Miwa for me as well. It's almost for the exact same reason I didn't know going into it, but once we kind of read through the chapter again, I was like, that line is so fucking badass. I'm like, yeah, it's gotta be him.
He gets two badass lines, basically. So.
Oh man, see, I was gonna go, like, I kept switching who I was gonna pick, like Asta, or maybe Reiji, maybe Kyosuke, but it's Miwa for me too.
Miwa, across the board.
Man, you go Miwa! You know, Marlene, the World Trigger editor, she hated Miwa, but this chapter actually made her pretty happy. She's like, he's not so bad. He's a thing that does things now.
He's not just the guy who's there to be like, I hate the neighbors. Okay, well, that covers that then. Miwa across the board, and then different series for each of us.
Yes.
But,
I want to mention something real quick before we get into all of our closing stuff. If you haven't heard, Jump announced, I forget where it was at, but they announced that this upcoming year they're going to be translating a couple sports series, and I think the first one on the docket to come out is Haikyuu, which is the volleyball manga. I'm a huge fan of that series, and they just put it out on pre-order now on Amazon, so if you want to pre-order a physical version of it, you can get it there. I'm going to be pre-ordering five copies of it. that we're going to be giving away when those come out as a contest. And when it comes out digitally as well, I'm going to get a couple copies of that to give away too. So for those people who are fans of sports series, but maybe didn't know if they are, you know, will like Haikyuu or anything like that, you may have a chance to get a copy yourself.
All right. I just now realized it was my turn to choose a suggestion for this. So I could just decide that we're going to do one of our two big annual series, for the next time, but I'm not sure. I think it might be a good idea for me to leave this off until next time to actually announce what we're going to do. I mean, I will tell Chris ahead of time, obviously, but maybe we'll just save the announcement.
So it'll be a mystery for everybody.
So, sorry about that, everyone. Like I said, I was pressed for time heading into this, so my bad. Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us for a weekly manga recap. We record the show here on hitbox.tv/RollOT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time normally, although sometimes we do need to change it up. You can follow us on Twitter to stay updated on that stuff. He's at RollOT, I'm at YRuler of Time, and Annalisa is at Kaito Ace. That's Kaito with a U at the end. You can check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com as well as on iTunes. Plus, you can view them on our YouTube page. Make sure to subscribe to that channel. You can also make sure to leave a comment and rating on iTunes so that we can beat those woodworkers. Helps the algorithm and all that crap.
It does. No one's doing it, though. We're doomed to be suffocated by woodworking podcasts for the rest of our lives, Nick.
Choking on sawdust.
Actually, I didn't want to announce this on air, but I guess we'll just get it out of the way. Next week, guys, we're not going to be talking about Black Clover or World Trigger or anything like that. I actually found a pretty nice table out of an antique store. We're going to talk about the engravings that were used along the side, because clearly you guys don't care about manga. All you care about is fucking woodworking.
Be sure to also ask us questions and give us feedback and suggest your manga for us to read. Send all that stuff to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com as the best place for us to keep track of that stuff. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy.
Yes, and a special thanks to Jackson Godfrey and Augusto Nicholas Chicas, who are our newest Patreon supporters.
What a name. Yeesh.
Augusto Nicholas Chicas, which I probably horribly butchered.
And special thanks go out to the guys who help out on the podcast. Steve Manor, tile card artist, he created the Akagami no Shiro Yukihime art that you see there. He's everywhere. He's on DeviantArt as Narak Fanboy. He's on Tumblr under multiple accounts. And he's on Patreon as well under Steve Man. And, of course, special thanks to Felix Dark and Infamous Planet for all the stuff that they do to help us out, including creating visual additions occasionally. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's going to do it, I think. We had a good time. Anything you want to close? Oh, thank you, Annalisa, again, for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun.
It is. We need some wacky topic to kind of go out on. So, all right. Olympics are coming up. You get to pick two characters from World Trigger to be
no,
on their volleyball
no,
team.
No, no, no. No more of those questions. No more left answers. No.
You got it for the bobsledding team out of a character from each series. No. But their power levels are all scaled down to work with one another.
They're from shonen series that have been featured on Weekly Manga Recap, but they're not from the series you normally recap.
You can do Shonen Jump series, but only ones that were recommendations.
You can do Shonen Jump ones, but only ones that were running during the 90s, and not One Piece.
You gotta pick four characters, but only from Jump Backs that you guys, or Jump Starts that ran the magazine, but are now over.
Ugh, fuck.